Well, then, let's get, get you seated.
Mr. Savage. Pull up a chair, sit a spell.
Hello, sir.
It's good to see you.
Sir.
And this is the... Well, hold on. We got to do this on the recording. This is a first meeting.
Adam, nice to meet you finally.
A pleasure.
Gary Wood, Adam Savage. We'll do a formal introduction with the accolades and, you know, all that stuff. So this is... Hey, welcome to the set.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I'm going to... If I can remember which one you are... I think you're this. Are you getting louder or not so much? Is that helping? Or?
That's perfect for me.
Did we do our little switch over?
I don't know. I haven't heard the videos back live again.
I think we're waiting for
the
go ahead.
Dun, dun, dun. We built Lego this morning.
You did?
5 o'clock in the morning, yeah.
Are you Minecraft Lego race.
Is this from a kit or was this from your head?
No. That's much too complex to do at 5 o'clock in the morning after not sleeping in our head.
I got up at 7 and did a little more work. I'm. Well, we'll cover this.
Yeah, we can. We have stuff to talk about.
Yeah, we do.
All right, here we go.
And we're back with Oktoberfest 2012. This is hour 18.
It's hour 16.
We've 8 hours to go.
We've 8 hours to go.
Oh,
so we've been up for
home stretch.
So we're three quarters of the way through.
No, two-thirds the way through.
Oh, math is really hard. It turns out you're not three quarters. 4 hours.
Yeah.
This is fascinating.
All right, I'll take two-thirds.
Norman Chan, Gary Whitta, of course, we're doing, and joining us for this next hour is Adam Savage.
Hello.
Who you know from such instructional videos as here is Adam Savage's burn bag from The Bourne Identity.
Yes.
And also, you're on Mythbusters, I guess.
That's
you do that too.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing this for Child's Play, which is a fantastic charity that raises money to comfort to sick kids in hospitals around the world, children's hospitals mostly.
We actually just had our Make-A-Wish Mythbusters annual visit.
I heard that
on Monday.
Yeah. And so I want to hear. We can talk. We should definitely talk about that. I want to tell people how to donate if they're interested in donating. It's tested.com/donate. If you get under the bottom of the page, there's a chip-in widget. That tells people what our current tally is. I put my notebook on the floor a minute ago, so I don't know what our tally is, but maybe
over 12,000.
Well, if you it's 12,000 on the screen, but if you add in what we have been pledged but haven't yet received from the stuff we've auctioned, it's closer to 14,000.
That's fantastic. We're doing really doing great work so far. So and if you, like I said, tested.com/donate. Adam, thank you so much for coming down this morning.
Absolutely.
Well, Saturday morning.
So this has got to be like a fascinating sleep deprivation science experiment for you at this point.
We have done some sleep deprivation experimentation.
Why am I not
on
surprised?
The show, mostly with Tori and Grant, which is never not entertaining.
That's got to be fun, yeah.
And I have experienced some sleep deprivation in my life, but I don't know if I've ever... I mean, I've stayed up for, I think, 55 hours at a stretch at one point.
55. I used to do that in college occasionally, and that was not a healthy thing to do.
Over two full days.
Yeah.
What did you do?
Well, I was messing up somebody's film. If you go in, look for a talk that I did at the Maker Faire a few years ago, and actually it's going to show up again because I refined that talk for the EG conference when this year's EG talks go up online. I took the job to art direct a friend of mine's film at NYU back in like 1987, and you know, had to be done by Friday. I had like 3 weeks, and on the Tuesday before, I realized I was nowhere near done.
So I'm going to ask you what I should probably know the answer to, but if you're art directing someone's film, I assume that means you are responsible for everything from like costumes and sets and
that's
props
production
and stuff like
design.
That? Okay,
so I was building the set and building and designing this ATM vestibule for the student film.
Okay.
Boy, did I.
So you had to make
up
a fake ATM,
I
basically.
Did. And I stayed up for 60 hours, 55 hours to get it done.
How did it turn out?
It's terrible. I lost a friend. That's how bad it was.
Was it recognizable as an ATM at all?
Oh, yeah. No, but I mean, it was not recognizable as a realistic ATM.
Ooh.
More like a, you know, a Brechtian.
So it's the Waiting for Godot of ATMs.
Yes,
that's not good. It's not where you want to be.
No, and that was and when I finally went to sleep, the thing is, after you stayed up that long, there's no real relief in falling to sleep. It's more like collapsing.
I have a hard time falling asleep. Last year, after we did this, we finished at noon, I guess.
Noon,
and I went home and I sat down. And I was like, I am way too cranked up at this point to get anywhere near sleep.
Yeah.
So I want
to push through.
No, I think I'm just going to close. I'm going to sit on the couch and I'll just edit some podcasts and start posting them and, you know, did some kind of menial stuff that didn't require a lot of thought.
Then and maybe at like 9 o'clock you take an Ambien and
Well, at 9 o'clock I was unconscious on the floor of the living room. Gina said I was moaning and making horrible noises. But yeah, so that's my night. Really looking forward to that. And of course, Game 3 of the World Series is on tonight too. So that'll be a lot
and,
of fun.
And that's fantastic.
I don't think I'm going to make it. That as excited as I am for that, I don't see how I can make it.
Oh, that's what TiVo's for, Gary.
That is tonight.
Yeah,
because it's Saturday.
Last year after Oktoberfest, you went to a concert.
I did.
I think you went to Treasure
that's
Island.
That's insane.
No, I went to We finished at noon, took a 2.5 hour nap, then went to a concert at night, got back at 1 a.m., then slept and went to the full day festival next day. Because it was Treasure Island.
Crazy.
Nice.
At Treasure Island.
This is the takeaway.
That was my choice. Yeah.
Crazy, Norm. Yeah.
So what have the experiments that you've done in sleep deprivation, what have you learned?
Anything useful for us at this
point?
Effects?
Now, it's too bad that you've asked that. Because where you've gone is to... I have an eidetic memory for every experiment that Jamie and I have done. But I do not have the same for every experiment that Cary Grant and Tori has done.
You know, that's an interesting thing. Because, you know, Norm and I worked on a magazine for a really long time. And we had this wall of all the covers of the magazine up. And I could look at a cover of the magazine and be like, oh, this was this story, this story, this story. They were all in June 2002. If you ask me that about anything else in the world, and I'm not looking – or even that, and I'm not looking at the wall of covers – it's not there.
Yeah.
But if I go to the old office and look at the wall of covers, you can pull it immediately. Are you thinking about specific items? Because I know you're very kind of item focused memory.
Well, I mean, I remember the builds. I do. I remember the builds, and I remember my emotions around them, like how hard they were, how fun they were. You know, you go and you use a kind of a memory's funny. Like you have the top level sort of brief story thumbnail that your brain holds. And then when you go to it, you can actually start to unpack all these other memories that are in there as you start to think through how that day went and what happened. So that's really easy for me to do, even 10 years in and 18,000 hours of filming.
That is a lot of filming.
But not with Cary Grant and Tori's story. I believe they did sleepy versus being drunk for driving. But I can't remember the others. I know there are people yelling at me like, how do you
not know
this?
I'm sure the chat is exploding right now.
I'm very sorry. Yes, we run the show as kind of almost two separate shops.
Did you ever do the cell phone versus driving drunk?
Oh, yeah, we did.
So
cell phone, far worse.
Really?
Yeah.
Being super drunk or being a little drunk?
Well, this is the interesting thing.
This is a horrible conversation.
No. It turns out that we can't test super drunk. The California... Let me start at the beginning. We would like to do all sorts of legal things on MythBusters.
Legal being the operative word.
You know, illegal.
Oh, illegal. Okay.
Illegal. And for instance, in San Francisco, you can't build something that shoots something.
Like really?
Yeah,
no trebuchets
you can't build
in San Francisco?
A zip gun. You can't build a crossbow. Even airsoft pistols are illegal in San Francisco. So when you want to use something like that, what you need to do is you need to call up the police. Because the law gets very specific when you start to read the statute. It'll say something like, a zip gun is an illegal item. It is illegal to make one. It is illegal to possess one. Except if you're a cop, you can possess it for the purposes of evidentiary retrieval or research.
Oh, guess what you guys do?
Exactly. So we call up the cops or the fire department or the bomb squad, and they help us to do this. However, when it comes to drunk driving, even having a cop present, you are not allowed behind the wheel of a car if you are above 0.08 here.
Even on a closed road?
Nope. Does not matter.
So have you tried...
You can be in your driveway asleep, and if you are in the driver's seat and the car is running, you are liable because you're in control of the vehicle.
Even if you have the keys. Yeah.
They do not. They do not discern whether you're on an open or a closed road. So when we've done it, we've actually had to... monitor my BAC as I drink beers in real time, waiting 20 minutes after each beer, and I get to 0.078, bang, we do the test.
Wow. So, and does this apply to all motor vehicles? Like if you go out and get go-karts or something like that, is it still the same rules?
I don't know. I think that if it's not street legal, there might be some difference, but I haven't read that.
Do you ever consider for some of these things figuring out going to other states where they may have more relaxed laws?
This might be okay in Nevada.
I will tell you that whenever Jamie and I do an appearance in Texas, we make the joke that it is funny and ironic that we shoot MythBusters, which is all about explosions and guns, in San Francisco, which is truly one of the most restrictive counties, both environmentally and in terms of munitions, in the country. Yeah. That doesn't mean that we don't get to do what we need to do. The police and fire departments and all of the California State Fire Marshal are fantastic with the permitting process and the safety and insurance and stuff that we have to go through. But boy, it would be a lot easier in Arizona or Texas.
You should just build a studio out in international waters where you can just do whatever you want.
If someone has an old cruise ship that we can utilize, we'll sail. How far out is it? Is it 40 miles?
I'm not sure, but then you've got pirates to worry about, so it's kind of a trade-off.
Oh, this is true. But something tells me we could hold off pirates for a fair bit.
I'm sure there's an episode in that.
Yes.
Like the kind of laissez-faire attitude that they have about this stuff, because I grew up in Tennessee, which is a pretty gun-friendly state. Yeah. When I went to Arizona with the friend for the first time, he was like, hey, we're going to go out to the desert, and also we're bringing a lot of munitions, and it's not even frowned upon. It's completely, yeah. It's a completely, like, you go out, there's a big gravel pile, and everybody goes out and shoots targets against the gravel pile in the middle of the national. It's just unowned land.
Indeed.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And we had a guest earlier who was talking about going to Japan, and they can have airsoft. They can run around without the red tips, you know, just in the public parks.
Right, but that's also because in Japan, a handgun is a nearly unseen thing. Yes. Yeah. I have this theory in my head that the Japanese, maybe someone gave this to me years ago, I can't remember, but the Japanese have, they satisfy all of their fetishes in a very exterior and safe way. The tentacle porn, the manga, and the airsoft. I mean, I remember going to a Japanese toy store when I was in Tokyo and being like, I wish I had $10,000 right now, because I've never tracer round BBs that like glow and leave trails of fire.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, we were talking to our friend Jeff, who covers games, and he used to go for Tokyo Game Show, and he would just take a couple of $1,000 and go to all the weird shops and buy airsoft guns and video games that you can't get here and all sorts of other crazy stuff. Put in an extra duffel bag that he took and bring it back. So
because they don't check your bags on the way back.
That's it. That's all there is to it. I'm going.
Yeah. You should make a trip to Japan, Adam. So let's see. So this is your first time in the office here, actually.
This is my first time visiting the office. It's a lovely spread.
This is
going to
be a mixed
bag
for you, because in a way you've selected this time well. Because 10 a.m. on a Saturday morning, this is kind of prime time for viewership. On the other hand, you are really getting us at the ragged end of our rope.
You guys actually seem quite spry to me. I see just some slight lags as you attempt to move from one subject to the other in your brain.
Just thinking about words and then saying them instead of just saying them like you normally do.
Having done this before, and I think my record for staying awake is similar to yours, because I was up for 50-something hours with the birth of my daughter a few months ago. But obviously you're so adrenalized and caught up with hormones and emotions that you don't even notice it until you finally have an opportunity to sleep, and then you just fall into a coma.
Yeah.
You don't even realize you're tired until it's all over.
55 hours?
It was a 52-hour labor. it was harsh.
How long ago?
4 months ago.
So maybe July just 2nd. Recovering?
Went into labor October, June 29th, and baby was born July 2nd. Something like that. It was nuts.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was
crazy.
Yeah.
It was crazy, but we got through, and it was very scary for a while.
Yeah.
You're so hopped up on whatever, that the fact that you're tired, you don't even realize until it's all over, and then you just go. But for something like this, which is a bit more low key, when you're doing 24-hour stretch, I feel like you do go through stages. Like about 6 hours ago, I was ready to call uncle. But you push through, and then you find like you almost have like a second wind. Then you realize that's a false floor. And that's going to fall out from under you eventually
as
well.
It's not a false floor. It's just a temporary one. I mean, I think that's what's fascinating about it is those second winds and third winds and even fourth winds, the adrenaline that comes from when something exciting happens or something you didn't expect, that all is part and parcel of, to me, the idea that your brain is this astonishing pharmacy that can deliver all these amazing medications to you.
It's like
when
people
you
who
them.
Run super marathons, you know, they run.
Oh, yeah.
And they go, oh, man, I have 50 miles left or 75 miles. That's just like 3 marathons. I can do that. Let me take it one marathon at a time.
I'm going to stop and have some peanut butter.
Right. Yeah. order a pizza on the way and gobble the entire
exactly.
pizza.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I never the ultra marathon people. That's taking it too far. I think.
Now, what's the deal with that? What's an ultra marathon?
50 or 100 miles?
Yeah.
So two, three, four marathons.
Now, but there's one, and I think it is in Tennessee. Okay, the guy that shot Martin Luther King,
James Earl Ray. James Earl Ray. Thanks.
He was ensconced in a prison. I'm thinking Tennessee.
It's in West Tennessee.
So it's basically he broke out at one point. I could be getting this whole story wrong, but he broke out at one point, and they found him.
Nobody's gonna notice.
They found him 36 hours later, and he'd only made it like 2 miles from the prison.
Wow, that's a terrible breakout.
And there was this guy who read that story, and he was like, "What is the terrain like around that prison?" So they engineered a ultra marathon through this terrain that in 20 years no one's ever completed.
So it's
like a 28-mile route that you have to do every day for 3 days.
Oh, that's horrible.
And it's brambles, and it's huge, 1,400-foot elevation shifts and stuff like that.
Well, so, I mean, when I was in high school, we ran cross-country, and some of those courses, that you'd get up in the mountains, and they would do horrible, horrible things. You know, you'd run up this mud hole that was like 35 feet long. That doesn't seem like a lot until, like, 100 people have run over in front of you. It's been raining for 3 days, and you're trying to claw up on hands and knees to get to the top of the thing and move on to the next fight. We got to find out about the ultramarathon, because I want to go watch people do that.
That's not running the whole time.
It's like run, walk, jog.
Run, walk, jog. There's all these different techniques for evacuating yourself while running without stopping.
Oh my god!
There's loping. People lope. I don't even know what loping is.
I thought the biggest thing I had to worry about was chafing.
That's
an issue.
The type of and then there's speaking of the brain pharmacy. I mean, these guys all talk about pushing through these barriers and getting high as a kite with like
the super endorphins.
Yeah.
What is the world record for going without sleep? Someone must have it, right?
I'm sure it's some sort of horrible Navy experiment.
Sleep is one of the few. You can actually kill somebody by keeping them from sleeping.
And I totally understand why sleep deprivation is used as like a torture technique. Because when I totally understand when you get to that place where I will just tell you anything. I'm so miserable from lack of sleep.
The thing that's bad about doing the podcast when we're a little sleep deprived is that I find that the first thing you stop noticing is the normal social cues. Like the first thing that I realized this last night as I was rambling on for like 4 minutes, everybody's kind of just staring off. And I realized that everybody's been bored for a solid 2 minutes, and I didn't realize that until I'd been talking for a fairly significant period.
Probably fighter pilots, answering your question. For fighter pilots who have, I mean, they take the speed, but they can fly, you know, many days nonstop or many hours.
And in the military, there's very, you know, even back to the Napoleonic times where you're on a ship and you had two or three watches on the ship, nobody ever slept more than 4 hours at a time. And round-the-world solo racers do it in 90-minute bursts. Like they sleep for 90 minutes, and they'll be up for 90 minutes, sleep for 90 minutes, up for 90 minutes. And they're able to oscillate their sleep patterns with their waking patterns to some efficiency. I always like Jerzy Kosinski, the writer who wrote Painted Bird and Being There, among others, apparently used to sleep from like 5 to 9 p.m. and from like 6 to 10 a.m. He slept in two bursts.
So he slept in 2 4-hour windows?
Yeah.
So he had all night and all day, and he just cut out the evening and the morning.
Yeah, and because he liked to stay up all night, but he had a lot of stuff to do during the day.
Yeah, that's really a lot of that would depend on what your social obligations are.
Absolutely.
And how
that could be a way of reducing your social obligations. Right,
being more productive at night and what your eating cycles are. It's a lot of ways to hack your body.
He was a far out dude. He was definitely a body hacker.
That seems like it would have some really negative connotations on your social and family life.
I'm not allowed to take Ambien.
You on Saturdays, you told us you get to spend time in your cave.
Gary,
actually built.
Gary, you sounded so dejected just then.
Yeah, there could have been a story there, but it just ended up being a sad footnote to the whole subject of sleep. unreported.
Is this related to the no pants incident on the airplane or?
No.
Do you want to tell the story or no?
I've had trouble sleeping in the past, and at one point I tried Ambien, and it really does work. It really will knock you out.
Yeah,
it's a very strong.
Do you have wonderful dreams?
The problem is you sleep very soundly. The problem is if you don't fall asleep in the 15 to 20 minute window where it's supposed to send you out, you will wind up instead staying awake and having the most wild hallucinations.
this is why some
people abuse it recreationally.
So this happened last Thanksgiving. My wife and I went to the Netherlands, literally for like 3 days. We were in and out. Jamie and I were awarded an honorary doctorate by the University of Twente, and we went to the ceremony. We decided to try Ambien to regulate our sleep while we were there.
And did you take it before?
No, I'd never taken it before, but I talked to my doctor and I got a prescription.
Yeah.
So first things first, we had heard from a friend of mine who managed a rock band, you never take the Ambien until the plane is in the air. Not even taxiing on the runway. Because if you take it and you fall asleep, good luck getting you awake. You will seem like the drunkest person alive.
Yeah, and they tell you in generally, don't take it until you're ready to go to sleep.
Oh, it says on the label, take it, get in bed and take it. Don't take it and get in bed. They make it.
Don't take it and go brush your teeth or anything. Yeah, just no, so, right so at the last minute.
Is this like turning off the light? Is it?
So it is definitely like, Ambien, as far as I'm concerned, when it works right, you go like this. You take it and you You wake up like about a minute later and you're like, well, that didn't work, except it's exactly 7 hours later.
Yeah, when it works, it wow. works well. It's, the problem is when it misfires or whatever, you miss that window where it's supposed to knock you out.
Yeah.
I wound up, and it wasn't like a bad trip or I was freaked out or anything. I was actually fascinated. It was almost like, not like a high, but I was convinced, we have a TV in the bedroom at the end of the bed there, and I was convinced that the TV had become a big furry mouth, a gateway through which I could perceive the entire universe, like a black hole into another dimension. And I was sitting up, just staring at it, fascinated. And I thought that the wooden floor had become a furry ocean, and I could sense it undulating. And it was all very real. It was so vivid, and it wasn't scary or weird. I didn't feel like I was tripping out or wanting to come down. I was just really enjoying the sensations. Leah, my girlfriend, who was next to me in bed, was not enjoying it at all. She ended up recording some of it. And it looks like something from a Paranormal Activity film, because I'm just so acting so wacky and in this kind of out of body way that she was so, I wasn't acting dangerous, but I would be staring at her in such a way that she's like, you're really freaking me out. Well, so she's like, I don't want you taking it anymore, so I had to find something else.
We each had an experience of staying awake on Ambien. Mine was that I took it, and then just before I was about to fall asleep, I realized, oh God, I got to send this email to Jamie.
And then you're screwed because you've missed that window.
Well, it was a minor screw, but here's what happened. So I had to email Jamie, and I opened up my laptop, and there was an email from Jamie going, how did the ceremony go? He stayed in the States. How did the ceremony go? And I had met the Queen of the Netherlands, Queen Beatrix. She was very nice.
Beatrix is a great name, isn't it?
It's an awesome name. Totally. See, children's book name.
It's one of my favorites. So, I'm just saying. It's just a thing that I'm putting out there for no reason whatsoever.
Queen Beatrix, I met her and we talked briefly. And so Jamie emailed me and he said, did you meet the queen? Was she hot? Now,
nice.
Queen Beatrix is like in her 70s. She looks very healthy, but she's in her 70s. So I wrote
no Helen Mirren. Queens age well is what you're saying.
If you have that much money and you don't age well, you're an idiot.
Fair enough.
So Jamie said, is she hot? And I wrote, oh, yeah, you should totally hit that. And then I went on to – I remember writing that sentence.
Okay.
And then I started writing about the sexual habits of European royalty.
Did you know about it or were you just making it up?
No, I don't remember the second half. I read it like 2 weeks later. I'm like, oh, my God, this is a surrealist masterpiece.
Printed it and put it on the wall in the office? Or just like,
Came up with a mythological creature that's the opposite of a siren called a minkress.
That's perfectly normal.
The second night, my wife said she was going to try and stay awake on Ambien, like as an experiment. She was like, oh, I'm totally going to, and I'm like, I don't know if that's a good idea, baby. And she's like, no, it's a good idea. So she's like, she takes it and she starts to get, I notice things are weird when she's got the refrigerator in the hotel room open and it's empty and she stares at it for about 10 minutes.
Is there a light in there?
She's just staring at it. And I'm just like, okay, baby, come on, time to get up. Look, bed's right there. Let's get in the bed. She's like, no, I gotta brush my teeth. Oh, okay. So I give her the toothbrush. She brushes her teeth. She finishes. I take the toothbrush and I'm like, I've made the bed now, triangle open, so it looks enticing. I'm like, go ahead and get in the bed. And she's like, no, it's okay. Wait, I want to take a bath. And I'm like, oh, I really don't know if that's a good idea. She's like, no, I got to take a bath. So I draw her a bath, and I stand there and I watch her, right? Like, because I want to make sure she doesn't slip or anything.
Vita Blue softball grip on the
So I make sure she takes a bath safely. Oh, she gets out. She dries off. I'm like, there's the bed. And she's like, no, I got to put my lotions on. So she's putting on... Her face creams, and she's like, now it's going really, really slow. And she's like, you know what you should do? You should take me into the other room and throw me on the bed and ask me questions about my mom.
I'm like, what?
She's like, I would probably answer all truthful. I would find a lot of stuff out. You're just going to have to remember and tell me what I said tomorrow.
That is a brutal self-introspection trip. That's not good.
I was like, I don't know if that's a good idea, baby.
It's a very interesting job.
She laid down in bed like, okay. Right away.
Oh. What is wow. an Ambien?
What's that?
What is in the Ambien?
I don't know, but it's serious business. Fairy There's dust. A reason why the directions are very specific.
Ground up mermaid fins and unicorn horn.
It's one of those things. It's one of those things that when you talk about it like this, I wonder why they give it to people. Because it seems like a really bad idea. Like, we have a real history of prescribing kind of bad drugs for sleep problems.
I mean, I do wonder sometimes about some of those TV commercials. Like Lunesta is another sleep drug I see a lot of TV commercials for. And when they run through the list of side effects, I'm like, you know what? I think I'd rather just take the insomnia.
All I think is heart attack, stroke,
suicidal thoughts.
Yeah.
Who needs it?
Well, the laws that opened up that took away cigarette ads from TV and alcohol ads from TV and put prescription drug ads. I don't think we made anything better. I remember seeing people happy and smoking. I guess they weren't smoking cigarettes when I was a kid, but people were definitely drinking booze and you know that's a wholesome activity. It's you know Don Draper drinks booze and he's okay.
I'm not sure if you're right about that.
The Don Draper part or the healthy activity part?
The wholesome activity. Well, but drinking.
At least it's better than the male enhancement drugs pasta. And the like. It's just. I don't. I mean, I guess alcoholism is down, so that's good. But.
So let me tell you what I've been doing this morning.
Okay.
I got
that's
up.
A good segue.
I woke up quite early. And got to the cave. First of all,
I bet we were up earlier, Adam.
I know you were up earlier. But you guys are coming tomorrow night, right?
Absolutely.
I'm having a secret Halloween party tomorrow night.
Don't tell everybody.
Don't know where it is.
That's true.
Right. So we're cool, aren't we?
Will's been
cool.
Working very hard on his costume, by the way.
I don't want to hear it from
actually,
you.
The other I've also been putting the finishing touches on Patton Oswalt's.
Yes,
Dr. Octopus
that's
costume.
What you're doing.
See, Patton tweeted a couple weeks ago that his daughter wanted him to be Daka Aka for Halloween.
How
and
is
he
his
was
daughter?
Like, something like, does anyone know where I can get a really good Dr. Octopus costume? And just as it sometimes happens, the way to make a really good, cheap, easy to wear, fun Dr. Octopus costume occurred to my brain.
I'm very interested in this.
Oh, I thought
this
the way is to
like
ask Adam Savage.
An insurmountable
task. That's the way to have a really
task.
Good Doc Octopus costume is to ask you.
Well, so I tweeted to him and said, DM me. I might be able to help you out. And, you know, the internet's head exploded. Like, wah! So Patton and I – actually, he tweeted back to – he DM'd me. We started emailing. And then we got on the phone. And I was like, are you coming up to San Francisco anytime soon? And he was like, I'm there. He was here doing a show at Cobb's that night. So I went to Cobb's and we talked about the costume. And I'm shipping it out to him on Monday morning. He'll have it by Tuesday.
Wow. So
are you
going to
view any
can
process?
We talk about this?
I'm
really interested because is this a movie, Doc Octopus?
Yes, we're doing the Alfred Molina Doctor Octopus.
Fine, Doctor Octopus.
Absolutely. The others are a lot more complicated because you've got full leotards to work with.
Well, and they're not like they don't have spatial relativity. The arms are all sorts of different lengths.
Exactly. Yeah. So what I've done is simply taken some gray mattress foam, which I cut on the bandsaw into long. Triangular struts, sliced it open on one side, installed armature wire,
okay.
Sealed it back up with foam glue.
Armature wire is kind of like coated.
Armature wire is basically pure aluminum wire. You can buy it at a hobby store. It comes in fine thicknesses, like actual wire. Mm-hmm. It can come up to a quarter inch or 5/16 inch thick. And people use it for clay sculpting. They use it to support clay sculptures.
Oh, so when you do when you're doing a wet arm and the clay is still wet, then you put that inside, and that's the
skeleton for
puppets. Well, whenever you're sculpting anything complicated in clay, that's bigger than more complex than a head. If it's got, it needs an internal armature in order to hold itself up, and that's you'd use this. And I've got scads of it from the special effects days.
You're well prepared.
And so it's comprised of four lightweight foam arms with grabbers at the end. I've used my nail is black because I've been doing the stencil painting to add detail. And then those mount to aluminum blocks that are mounted to an aluminum plate on a braced, effectively like a aluminum plate that we wear like a backpack.
Okay.
So I'm going to put some adjustable straps around the chest, around the waist, and some shoulder straps. And then the coat goes on over that. It's really trivial.
And he just wears, he's just wearing like a brown shirt.
He
chose a, I'm going to stop at a motorcycle store and pick up the goggles on my way out of here today. He chose a trench coat. I'll weather it a little bit. I'll make it look a little bit more beat up. The hardest part about Halloween costumes isn't making them. It's actually wearing them and making them comfortable to wear. You know, in the Henson, I was recently told that in Jim Henson's shops, one of the rules is nothing gets worn on the head. It's very easy to take an animal's costume and make it something you strap to your head, but boy, that is hard work to move that around after even like 10 minutes. When I wear my no-face costume, it's a tiring and exhausting costume to wear.
I mean, after you were wearing the Ringwraith costume at Comic-Con this year, you were the pictures of,
yes, everyone says,
of you just pouring sweat. Yeah.
If you're wearing a helmet.
Everything that covers your whole body is going to be hot and heavy. There's no way.
Yeah.
Well, so we talked to Bill Doran, who builds mostly video game props, but he does other. He's made a Mal pistol. And he's done
from scratch, or did he do a?
I can't remember. I think he
built it from scratch. It's just casted, you know, resin.
Yeah.
But you know, a lot of these people make armor. They use like the foam.
Like
they
foam
use
mats.
The Crayola craft foam.
Yeah.
Oh, and the camping mats.
The camping mats. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like the carbon fiber.
It looks like the carbon fiber. It also, well, you can also get it smooth. The best thing about those camping mats is that hot glue glues that closed cell foam like nobody's business.
When you can paint, you can prime and paint and all that
stuff. You
can prime
it.
Right?
Roscoe makes a paint specifically for foams, but what a lot of people do is they do the spray on Plasti Dip, or they'll actually brush on Plasti Dip because if it's not sticking, it doesn't matter because it's a singular coat over the whole thing. But people have made full sets of Iron Man armor using camping mats and hot glue.
So here's my question for you. It is right now October 27th. Halloween is 4 days away, if my math is right. If you don't have a costume right now, what is an awesome Adam Savage approved costume that you can pull together this afternoon by going to the hardware store and all the – like, this is a hard question. I realize I'm putting you on the spot.
Oh, man.
So,
yeah. But, you know, so it's – Wicked Witch of the West is always easy, green makeup. But, you know, I don't know. It's funny that Halloween ends up being a holiday I rarely dress up for. I mean, a couple of years ago, I took my kids out and I was Chewbacca. That was really fun. Although my feet were torn up by the end of the night walking on the lifts.
Boots. Oh, wow. Are they like electrician's lifts, or are they just lifts?
No, these are like 7-inch foam boots that make me much higher. You know, I will tell you that years ago, Jamie Heineman won a costume contest at a party full of special effects dudes. I think his costume cost him about 10 cents.
So did he just do something incredibly gross?
Here's what he did.
Okay.
He went as a side of meat. So he wore normal clothes, but he took red chalk line chalk. Right, so it was kind of like a ruby red from a hardware store chalk line,
a straight line
from when you draw and snap a line. Right, so he got this red chalk and he covered his whole head. He rubbed it all into his whole head so that his head was red. Then he took rubber bands and he took like 4 rubber bands and stretched them around his face, and he looked like a trussed up pork loin. And apparently, and because he's got a bald head, apparently it was so freaking effective, he won the costume contest.
Wow.
Five minutes and ten cents.
And a shaved head and some rubber bands, and ready to go. So there you go.
I will say, you know, so this year I'm wearing, since we covered it on Tested, I've further refined my Master and Commander costume. I actually happen to know that Russell Crowe got to see pictures of it because we have a friend in common.
Oh, wow.
He instructed me that the epaulets were wrong, so I've adjusted and redone the epaulets so that they're more correct.
Which are coils.
They're actually – it's funny. When they talk about spun gold, this is actually the stringy things on epaulets are a pair of effectively wire springs – except that they're gold-plated wire springs with a thread in the center of them so that they don't unravel and you don't look like a slinky.
Wow.
It's not just cotton. It's not just tassels.
No. So I've made that more accurate. So I'll be wearing that. That'll allow me to host properly.
You don't, you're not wearing a big helmet, so you can breathe and you won't.
Yeah, no.
Be
who wants to host a party when they're, no, when you're going through
the secret location?
Yeah. You know, Iron Man's always popular.
And a friend, you know, a friend of mine's throwing a Halloween party tonight that I'm going to, and he always chooses a theme which allows people who want to put on costumes to go put on a cool costume, but they also allow you to just look right if you show up merely dressed up.
Okay.
And I think that's brilliant.
That's a good way to handle it and remove stress from
absolutely,
the attendees.
Absolutely, absolutely. It bridges that gap for people.
Yeah, because that's always because the fear at Halloween is always that you'll misunderstand and you'll go to a Halloween party that's not actually a costume party, wearing some sailor suit or something yeah, like that. And I mean, you can pull off a lot of, like, you can pull off a James Bond at a fancy party, bust out the tux, and you're like, oh, you know, I just thought it was a little overdressed, I guess. I'll go back with the waiters. But you, sailor suit, you can't pull off.
No.
There's no talking out of that.
Have you seen there's a website which I saw a few weeks ago which blew my mind. It was a taxonomy of the Bumblebee costume, all the way from cute baby to whore.
So it goes all the way through the sexy phase.
It goes all the way from the cute to the sweet, to the funny, to the awesome, to the preteen, then to the...
So I assume there's a baby and a dog somewhere on the cute end, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And
yeah.
then it's
there's also
something
some
with glitter on the other end.
Amazing dog costumes out there.
Well, so...
They can be pretty creative.
I personally like I saw a humping dog a few years ago where it was like a long dog and the back legs were the back legs of one dog. And yeah, then there was a fake dog up on the back. And
looking
and,
like he was humping
the first
dog.
It looks like he was really working the hell out of the bottom dog. Like for somebody jiggled in exactly the inappropriatest ways.
I saw one similar to that, except that the way that it worked was that the rear dog and the front dog were actually cooperating and carrying a package.
Oh, no, that's good. That's good.
Two dog costume.
Yeah, but no, it was a one dog.
Oh, okay, yeah.
When you have a long dog, you have opportunities.
But this
for
was actually a Scotty. This was actually a Scotty Terrier.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
So it's just two very short dogs.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, of course we have Chloe is a corgi, so she gets all the bananas and hot dogs and all that.
Because yes.
I mean, she's long. Those are always good.
And babies, as we've discovered, go through terrible
babies
times at Halloween because they have no say in it. They're getting dressed up in things no matter what they.
I've always thought that you could make a really amazing inappropriate baby clothing line for the period of time when they're really a reflection of the parents' taste and wow, as shopping for baby clothes, it's there's a lot of like super cute pink stuff that has ruffles, and there's not a whole lot of ironic T-shirts that make a comment on the state of society.
About four years ago at Comic-Con, Jamie and I were at the autograph table in the autograph room. And the people are coming through, and all of a sudden someone plops a baby in front of me. And the baby is wearing a onesie that says, "Proof that nerds have sex."
Nice. That's a Comic-Con
and
number.
So people are laughing.
What was it plop in front of you?
Did they want you to sign the baby?
Well, so the thing, here's how the progression went, is they went, "Ah," someone said, "You should sign the baby." So sign the baby. And then the whole crowd was like, "Sign the baby." And they were like really, really clear that I had to sign the baby. And I was like, okay.
Did you sign?
So I didn't sign it on the flesh. I signed the baby. Okay. I signed the onesie.
But we're going to take the baby right out of here and get your name tattooed on. It'll be a something they can remember for the rest of their life.
I shouldn't have signed the baby's face. Is that
right? No, not on the forehead.
So I handed the signed baby to Jamie, and he starts to sign it. At that point, the baby starts to cry, and so I said, "Stop pressing so hard."
So like, if you sign the baby, do you sign big or do you sign small? Like, what's the baby signing strategy? That's something I've never encountered.
It's just a cloth strategy, honestly. Anyone who has to sign stuff will tell you that signing clothing is never simple.
Yeah,
you always have to stretch it, and then there's you know, you have to kind of hold on to someone sometimes, but they've got to stretch it. It can be tricky depending upon the material. The baby onesie was actually relatively straightforward, and I had a big fat marker, which makes it easy because you can use a light touch.
Okay.
Going back to that Patton Oswalt costume you're making,
yes,
are you documenting that in photos?
I am. I've been taking tons and tons of photos, awesome, so we'll be able to cover
that.
It well.
Dump a gallery, yes, up on the site.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Perfect.
What's on your list of projects of things that you really want to make, costumes or props or whatever, that you haven't got to yet but you know you're going to want to do at some point?
Gary
coming in with real questions here.
Well,
I used to be a journalist.
I know, it's good.
I'm into right now heavily into making the backpack for a 2001 spacesuit, but very specifically not the ones that you remember from the movies. But there's a in the first part of 2001 when they go to the Clavius base on the moon and you see the monolith there. They wear a different style of spacesuit than they do on the Jupiter mission.
Very specific.
Oh yeah.
I mean we know about the specific. So why that one over the because the Jupiter ones were kind of more molded plastic, right?
But no, these suits aren't multicolored. They're silver suits like the Mercury suits.
Okay.
They're same rib, so it's effectively the same pattern as the Jupiter suits, but the backpack and front pack are kind of a medium blue, like a royal blue, really nice. And it's mostly that it's different, that no one's built one before. That's why I'm going to do it.
And so when we talked a little while ago, we talked about RPF a little bit, and we've talked about it a fair amount on both podcasts and Inside the Cave videos and all sorts of stuff. But he talked a lot about Pepicura because he started doing this a few years ago. I apologize. This action's a little rough. I did a bad job painting. it's the first time I painted anything in about 15 years with spray paint, and I got over anxious and made horrible drips on a couple of pieces.
This is made out of wood.
No. Try again.
Oh, okay. It's 3D printed.
It is 3D printed.
Sorry, I saw what looked like a knot, but it turned out to be the top node of the...
And if you look over there behind Will, that's the bigger version.
There's a big, giant version of it over there.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, that was a gift to us from Bree Pettis, who actually is CEO of MakerBot.
And we auctioned that. MakerBot. How much did we get for that?
So we auctioned the one that you're holding right now for charity for like $220.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, we've done pretty good.
And I offered to make one that I didn't screw up the painting on, but we'll see how
I think that one's kind of charming that it's imperfect. It looks kind of homemade.
Yes.
It's the neat thing about that is, you know, the whole thing's 3D printed, including the pegs, the axles that hold hold the edges on. So as you use it more... Oh, good catch.
Easy.
Lightning quick reflexes. I didn't even move, I don't think. As you use it more, it gets a lot smoother and moves faster and all that kind of jazz. So... but I use Pepicura. Bondo to fill the holes. Yeah, so he said start with Pepicura. We've talked about this a lot on Still Untitled.
Pepicura is fantastic.
And he's, you know, make your models, learn how to make 3D models,
Here's the thing about Pepicura is I learned to build with these books called The World at Your Feet. We should do a whole thing on them, on Tested.
Okay.
It's called The World at Your Feet, and they are paper buildings. They are not die cut. They are pages of
like you punch them out?
No, you don't punch them out. You have to cut them out with a razor blade and then score them and then assemble them. And they're all the great world's landmarks. Taj Mahal, the Capitol Building in Washington, Empire State Building, Sears Tower, Chrysler Building. I built all of these when I was a kid.
Is it like tab and slot kind of construction, like the Pepicura?
No, they're like it's like tab and glue, like using Elmer's glue to put it all together.
So you have a flat edge and you know where to put that.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
It's a long process to make these, but it's the greatest training to build stuff out of paper and to play with a planar form and modifying it so it can give you compound curves. Once you understand how that works, you start to understand how everything works. Because sewing, welding, carpentry, all of them are effectively the same process. They are the process of joining planar forms to each other under certain rules and restrictions. But you are always restricted by how the material moves.
The difference is how you affix the material and how flexible it is.
Once you understand one, you really understand all of them.
And the modern day version of that is just papercraft. You can just download PDFs and files anywhere online, any style. People have files.
So there's a grand papercraft project I've got in my head that I really want to do, which is I would like to do an HO scale. I think that's 1/90th scale-ish. Model of the bathhouse from Spirited Away. Mm-hmm. And I want to do it all in white.
The exterior?
The whole exterior. Not the interior yet. The whole exterior.
How big is that in
my estimation is about, I believe it would be about many, 18 many inches
stories.
Tall.
But it's like 10 or 12 stories or something in the movie. It's really huge. Like
yeah, it's quite large.
Okay.
And I have massive amounts of reference material. There's a few people, you know, used to be Flickr was a great place to go search because the searches for Flickr don't show up on Google.
Right.
Go and find radical stuff there. DeviantArt is also a fantastic place because a lot of people practice their skills at like building stuff in CG, and they show their practice runs on DeviantArt. So I found great elevations and 3D renderings of the bathhouse that are really accurate, really nice for reference. And I've got this massive, I've got all the cardboard, I've got all the stuff.
And you want this to be paper at the end.
Yeah, I want it to be white paper. I'm not going to paint
paper,
it.
Not
yeah.
Even paint it. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not going to give it the texture. I'm going to have it all be white. That's what thrills me.
Hey, so it is 10:40. We have a couple things going on. Thanks for the reminder, Joey. Guns for Kids is cooking right now. I would strongly advise you to stay away from those Milky Ways that are caramel apple.
The caramel
they
apple are
no,
interesting.
No, Adam, have you had
better on paper
green
than in reality?
Kit Kat?
No,
green tea Kit Kat is worth
green,
having.
Green tea Kit Kat's good.
So what's wrong with this one?
They just taste
it's all right. It's just not. It's not as good as you think it's going
to
be.
If you would like to contribute
but
to
green tea
Kit Kat
is great.
You can by going to tester.com donate. There's a chip in widget at the bottom. The nice thing about that is that goes directly from you to Child's Play's PayPal account. Mm. We don't take any cut. Chip in doesn't take any cut. It's just a way to track.
Adam gave us a little bit of a boost because the donation curve has definitely kind of spiked upward in the last hour.
Excellent, excellent,
fantastic, wonderful, wonderful.
This is like my world has been improperly color timed.
The hues shifted.
Mm. No. It turns out there's a whole global network of exotically flavored
Kit Kats.
What
is happening in here?
I've got to think that the caramel apple immediately preceding the green tea Kit Kat, which is kind of a delicate flavor.
Oh my god, we're missing this because the shot is on Joey doing his 1,000 push-ups.
Oh,
right
Joey's
now.
Doing his 1,000 push-ups. So he's got to be getting close to 1,000 at this point.
He's at 800 almost.
While producing this podcast.
He's going to crush it. He's got it.
He's doing 1,000 push-ups.
$1 a push-up and $2 for every push-up over 1,000.
For charity.
I don't know if those are real push-ups.
The Guinness Book of World Records is 90-degree angle.
90
like degrees. Their ruling is that your elbow has to reach 90 degrees.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's doing it.
I think we have a kind of low angle
he's
on
better.
It there.
You,
no,
oh,
well,
you,
everybody
you like
likes
the caramel
Reese's.
Stuff better than the Kit Kats?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my goodness.
All right.
But caramel is one of my particular kryptonites. Now, do you happen to have the candy corn flavored Oreos?
No,
have you tried them?
By those. I don't like candy corn.
I love candy corns. Are one of my favorite things in the world.
I like candy corn. Did you see the thing about the candy corn on the cob?
Yes, that was beautiful.
I thought about making that, and then I realized that I didn't want to become diabetic overnight because it was. I can't remember what you jammed it into like a nougat log or something, right? Wasn't that? It was like you take
jammed
ears
it
of corn
into a nougat log.
Well, it's you know, it's something that happens all the time.
I think I saw candy corn M&Ms at the store. I think that's a thing in autumn as well.
We were in New York. Wes went to the M&M World store in Manhattan, and we found a ton, just an absolute ton of like he found tons of different flavors of M&Ms: mint chocolate chip and raspberry and grape and all sorts of crazy stuff. I forgot to mention if you're watching on YouTube and you don't know what this is all about. We're from tested.com. We put our videos on YouTube. We also have this whole other site. You can come check us out at tested.com/live. And you may have to register, but there's a live chat there. There's a bunch of people talking. They're probably commenting on all the things that we have forgotten or mistaken along the road here.
Oh, yeah. No, I really like these, Norm.
You should take more.
You take all you want.
Caramel.
No, caramel.
Yeah, you should take
Hershey's.
I don't think anyone else
I know,
is going
I know who's going to host this gift tomorrow night.
And you realize that kids like chocolate because... In the old days, they used to sell caramel-covered chocolate-covered caramels,
mm-hmm.
and the kids would be sucking the chocolate off and spitting out the caramels because the caramel was terrible.
You're wrong.
And that's
are
why
you not
Hershey
a peanut butter
said,
guy?
I'm going to sell the chocolate.
Are you not a peanut butter guy? Because I saw you toss that Reese's cup back in there.
No, I love... Actually, there's two separate answers for that. I love Reese's, but it just wasn't in the mood for Reese's right there.
All
right. I can't stand peanut butter. I'm not a peanut butter guy.
So do you like the big Reese's or the middle-sized Reese's or the small, like, is there preferred Reese's size?
I like the Reese's Bites, the little ones.
The little tiny ones that are, like, not even wrapped.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm more partial to the mid-sized ones. I think it's a nice ratio of chocolate and peanut butter. But the small ones are interesting.
I've grown to really like the small ones. Like, I love York Peppermint Patty, but I like only the ones that are the size of a silver dollar. I don't like the big ones. That's too much.
Well, the king size ones, the ratio of peanut butter to chocolate is way off.
Yeah.
Well, and then somebody sent us one time that was like a dinner plate size, and that should have been a war crime. Frankly, that was it was too much chocolate and peanut butter.
I grew up not liking peanut butter because it's, in England it's just not part of the kind of the snack food.
What do you eat instead? Some sort of
you
like dairy spread?
Every other disgusting thing, but peanut butter is just not a big deal there. And I came to America and had never really developed a taste for it, so I didn't like it. And then just in the last year, I discovered I really like it. Hmm. As you hit 40, that is not the right time in your life to discover that you like this stuff. And now the problem is everything, because everything in that's Reese's is bright orange. I see it everywhere now. The bright orange stuff, when I walk down the Walgreens candy aisle, just jumps out at me. Because there's 800 different kinds of Reese's products.
Mm-hmm. The candy people and the detergent people went to the same branding school.
Like, they know what they're doing. They're not stupid.
Oh, you've heard about that, right? So, you know, now the big thing is to put the little packages of detergent in your dishwasher. Mm-hmm. Rather than pour it in, they make separate little packages.
Plastic degrades, yeah.
And they make them really colorful. So they've been having problems because they've got these ones that look like candies. Like
crazy spirals. Oh, wow.
And kids are eating them.
Oh, that's terrible.
Oh, that's bad.
It's a problem when you make a lethal product that looks like a nice candy.
Well, so the interesting thing about those as a product is they go against one of the core tenets of, like, if you want to talk about the faceless multinational corporations that sell detergent to us, you know, there are two of them, basically. They're both over there somewhere. But one of the things that they've always done is kind of do – I don't want to say deceptive because that's not right, but they're very unclear about the proper dosage size for things like laundry detergent, dishwasher detergent, things like that. So when they're selling you those packets in a fixed size, that is a surprisingly consumer-friendly move, except for the fact that apparently they look like candy and children are eating them and getting very sad. I got to think that doesn't taste very good.
Yeah.
You'd think immediately, this is bad.
Yeah.
But they make candy that looks like Lego bricks is probably even more disruptive. Yes.
Wait, they make a candy that looks like
Lego bricks? And when I first saw that, it sold as like loose candy, like by weight. And I remember seeing thinking, there's no way that – how is that a good idea?
It's the bullet candy is next. So this has all happened in the last couple of weeks. We have been in here and various things have happened. We got air conditioning and internet and running water and things like that over a period of time. And then we realized we probably better make some sort of set. So we have two set designs here. You should know this since, you know, your picture's on the wall back behind us.
It's a great set.
We got to get Jamie to the
he'll like that booth. He'll look fantastic.
He's gonna have a real, like, he has the facial hair for the era that this kind of type of photo represents.
As an aside, so we're doing some stuff next week which requires us to wear some fairly heavy duty hazmat gear, and the guy who's helping us with the gear, I said, what kind of respirator? Because we're going to be wearing our own breathable air. Mm-hmm. That's how
that's serious
working
business.
With this. And I said, what kind of respirator is there? And the guy went back to our producer. The respirator it's very specific, but it requires you to be smooth shaven. Is that all right with the guys? And I was like,
no.
Have you seen
not
the
even
show?
A little bit. And then, not even a little bit. Like, have you seen the show? And then Jamie goes, well, I mean, what does it actually look like? Because honestly, you know, I could seal anything to my face. Just put enough Vaseline all around your mouth and you'll get a good seal. And I was like, Jamie, if you want to go do that, you go right ahead.
What? How do you? Oh, that's such a bad idea.
Well,
so what? In fact,
right.
Very practical.
What in fact is the solution? Find a different kind of respirator, or what?
Actually, the solution may be that this guy goes and does this first stage for us that requires the separate air source, and that we use we're still trying to work that out. There may also be other respirators. That
right, I mean, you've
like got to
think the kind of things like firemen use would be
the stuff that we actually have that. Two of the breathable air units of firemen use, but they're very specifically made for entering a burning building. Now, what this means is that in a burning building, you can't see very well, mm-hmm. but you go in with your crew, so you need to know that everyone on your crew is safe. So these units have a very specific feature, which is if you stop moving in them for more than 15 seconds, they go. Until you move again.
That is a wonderful feature if you're in a burning building and just got conked in the head, but terrible if you're trying to shoot a TV show, I'd say.
Indeed. It is the worst feature for shooting a television show.
Did you discover this after purchasing the headset?
Well, no. They were donated by the company that makes them. And you've used them several times, and they've been fantastic for those things.
It's unfortunate that they couldn't just disable that feature on the US.
So the other thing I did this morning was I swapped out the screen of an iPhone.
Oh. Did you drop one already?
No. My son has an iPhone 3. And his screen was really, really broken.
That's a tough phone swap. That's a tough screen swap.
Well, in fact, actually, so here's what happened was yesterday I tried swapping just the digitizer and I cracked the digitizer as it was going in. And so once I got it all back assembled, it didn't work.
Yeah. In fairness, that is, I think, the worst one.
Oh, really?
The first one was worse because it was all glued together. But I think that's the hardest one to actually disassemble because all the wires, the wires aren't long enough.
Well, so in this one, this morning what I did was I was going to take his phone, back it up, transfer it to another old 3GS that I've got, which I know isn't big enough to hold all of his apps, but at least he'd get a phone back.
Yeah.
And then I was looking at it. It was like, same phone. I could pull off the whole screen assembly and swap that out, which is much easier. Lo, it totally worked.
It did work.
Yeah.
So this is from a 3 to a 3, a 3GS to a 3G?
No, a 3GS to a 3GS.
3GS to a 3GS. Yeah.
So I had to use tweezers to get that number 3 cable
that's
in, which
the
is
problem.
That's the hardest one.
And it's either on the top edge or the bottom edge. I can't remember. And it's like you have that much slack.
That particular move was not that hard for me.
When I did that, well, if you have the right kind of tweezers, it's not that hard.
Yeah.
If you don't know how that cable works when you're taking it apart, you can actually break the connector on the board.
Yeah.
And then you have real problems.
Out and not,
it's a slide. Yeah. I destroyed, I think, 3 phones shooting that video.
Oh, shit.
No, it was two. What was it? 2 digitizers and a phone, right?
You're trying to repair.
Tiloton tablets and a microphone.
It was not one of my best days. But I mean, the good news was the 4 was out. So we usually, when new iPhones come out, we go talk to all of our friends and are like, hey, you want to sell your old phone? I'll give you $100 for it right now.
Yeah.
And they're just like, okay, $100, that's great. So then we have a collection of last year's phones that we use for dumb how-tos.
Oh, nice.
And things like that.
So the other repair, which I haven't gotten the guts up for yet, and I went and looked at the iFixit teardown, is I have a new 15-inch MacBook Pro fully loaded with Retina. Yeah. It's gorgeous.
I'm so sad.
Boy, that thing is amazing.
Yeah.
But the there's a crack in my space bar.
Huh. How'd you do that?
I don't know. I have no idea.
You could just take it into the Apple store.
That machine got very heavily criticized for being... I mean, Macs never have been, but that one in particular, they said, was like the least user serviceable computer ever.
At the end of the teardown, they described it as an ease of fixing, a 1 out of 10.
Yeah, well, the battery is the big problem.
You have to unheat stuff and...
I'm going to tell you, from personal experience, if you have to get a heat gun... to break glue. Remember that time we took apart your iPad?
Yeah.
I mean, just full disclosure, it wasn't really your iPad. It was one that we went out and anyway, we bought specifically for the purpose of destruction. Anytime you have to get the heat gun out to separate glue, it's not going to go together quite right again.
Right.
Like that is a life-threatening maneuver for most electronics components, because the line on melting the glue and not destroying the temper on the screen or adding some weird discoloration. Yeah. Is real
really
thin.
Fine.
And if you don't have a calibrated heat gun...
Well, so I bought a new keyboard for it, and I have a full... I mean, I have a very packed, loaded kit for disassembling everything Mac, with the Pentalobes and everything. But I looked at that teardown, and I'm like, I'm not sure I really want it. Because you have to take out everything to get to the keyboard.
Yeah, that's the problem.
It's not that the unibody comes off. It's that every last thing has to come
and
out.
It makes me wonder how even Apple does it when you return it to them. Because, I mean, these things are made under such exacting conditions in these Chinese factories that I don't know how they even service them themselves.
Most likely they plug a Thunderbolt cable into another laptop and copy your hard drive over in about 10 minutes.
I think that's what it is. You just
get
another Mac.
They give you one that looks exactly the same.
I couldn't allow PearShop to do that. I'd have to clone my drive, wipe it, and send it to them.
Well, you back everything up, though,
right? Of course they do, okay. but it's still a pain in the ass.
So we're coming close to the end of the time. I'm going to plug the donate link again. It's tested.com/donate.
Donate right now.
Yes, please do.
Like I said, I closed my laptop, so I don't know what our total is. I'm not doing a terrible job here. Thank you so much for
Adam should do some Mad Libs.
Mad Libs.
I'm going to say.
I gotta tell you.
I'm going to say.
Every
I think
minute Adam will rest
every minute
Adam,
peace
Adam
to the creator
here.
Of Mad Libs.
I know.
Better.
Exactly. Last week.
I think Paul and Storm should write a song for him.
I think that's actually
fantastic. I
think
since they did Nugget Man, I think they should do Mad Libs Man.
Or they did a song for the creator of the McNuggets?
Of Chicken McNuggets. Yeah. Nugget Man? Oh, my gosh. Just go look for it today, buy it on iTunes or wherever you can find it. Yeah, Paul and Storm, their song Nugget Man about the creator of Chicken McNuggets, Ronald E. Baker. is
it done to the tune of Rocket Man?
No. It's not. It's so,
that's original. How I'm hearing it. In my
head. I had that whole song now. It's right
now
there.
I just want some nuts.
We have some Black Blood of the Earth in the other room. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's a guy named Phil Broughton over in Berkeley. Right, that's Partially Drunk, I believe, isn't it?
That's like a super
very,
caffeine.
Very it's serious, super coffee. Concentrated coffee.
It's to be. I think you guys had some at Woodstock, actually, in the bags in the back.
As tired as I've been through this whole process, I won't touch this stuff.
Gary's
no,
afraid.
No, I wouldn't
of it.
Either.
He has the fear. It's not bad. It's 50 milliliters of 50 milligrams of caffeine, which is I think two normal cups. It's for the normal stuff. There's some in there labeled death, which is actually that shouldn't
double
be.
Yeah, that's
you know,
the stuff
I will
you
say we
from.
Flew to London this summer. We flew through London this summer, and we didn't take any Ambien on that whole trip, and we did generally just fine. My wife and I, it wasn't as bad as it was when we went to the Netherlands.
That's a deep callback at this point.
Well, yeah,
I don't remember what we're talking about anymore.
So, Adam, would you be open to doing some Mad Lib? One Mad Lib?
Yes, absolutely. Well, bring it on.
I'll give you a choice of three kinds of Mad
Lib. You should give him a salt pocky to get this started.
Would you care for a pocky?
A pocky.
A salty
pocky. Let's see, what else do we have? This is coconut chocolate. That sounds revolting. This is just chocolate.
Let's just do the Mad Lib.
Okay.
We have a space theme.
I'm going to give you a choice of three. Mad Libs from Outer Space, Monster Mad Libs, or Star Wars Mad Libs.
Wait, what was that pink one?
Yam Yam Kids?
That looks good.
Those are good.
I just dipping.
Well, dipping is, I mean...
These are for dipping?
I'm a fan of those.
It's like right, snack packs, but with frosting and cookies instead of cheese.
Let's try this.
So horror-themed? Space-themed?
Outer space.
Horror. Yeah, the horror Mad Libs. We busted that out.
Horror Mad Libs.
Charity.
Or the Star Wars ones.
Or Star Wars.
Star Wars.
You want to do Star Wars?
Yes. All right.
The box advertises episodes 1 through 6.
What
are episodes?
We know that you're involved
4 and 5.
In some way with the... So... We should have talked about Return of the Jedi. This was the perfect, because you guys have very differing feelings on Return of the Jedi. I think both of you feel about the same
who has
level
different,
strong.
What?
Adam feels that the Star Wars ends with Empire Strikes Back, and you feel like Return of the Jedi is underappreciated. I feel that
Return of the Jedi is underrated, but that's just partly where it falls in my history. I mean, that was one of the I saw that when I was 11 years old. One of the first movies I saw on the big screen, and it had a big effect on me. And honestly, I think it holds up. I think the movie gets a bad rep, but you know, everyone has different personal taste. I think everyone can agree Empire Strikes Back is the best one. I wouldn't argue with that.
Everybody, yeah.
I just think that Jedi gets a bad rep.
See, you were
still,
old enough to be
to this day,
bitter and
best,
angry about the Ewoks.
The best fleet-scale space battle ever put on film.
Oh, I don't disagree that there's some beautiful stuff in Jedi that is, but the Ewoks, man, they just lose.
I know that Ewoks irritated a lot of people.
The fact that the Ewoks beat the Stormtroopers is hard to swallow. Stormtroopers seem pretty impotent when you're pitted against some teddy bears.
To this day, my kids know that they can annoy my wife by going, Jinga Wunga Funga What?
Oh. Are we going to close this out by singing Yub Yub?
No, no. We have opened the show with that before. All right, let's bust out.
Okay, do this. This is such a terrible
idea.
Please
be as creative.
Yeah, feel free to
and an adult as you want.
There've been some really horrifying things said in the Mad Lib segment of this show. This show is, reiterate, this is not a show for kids. Tested.com/donate for child.
Okay, and I'm not going to look at it. We'll look at it when it's done.
Okay,
let's start with an adjective.
An adjective.
That was a good save.
Sticky.
2 for 2.
All right. A plural noun.
A plural noun. Wombats.
A noun.
This is the part of the
dilithium crystal.
Oh, that you were looking around the room. I was expecting you to say light.
Crossing the streams there. I like
it. I know. I am.
Adjective.
Green.
Colors. People aren't pulling.
That's
colors
an interesting.
So far.
Yeah, I like that. Part of the body.
Now, see, this is an opportunity.
Midi-chloridians.
Okay. That's not at all where I expected to go. I would have gone with something much bluer on that one, I think.
I don't acknowledge the existence of midi-chlorians, but that's okay.
No, I don't either.
Adjective.
Some would argue that midi-chlorians are a parasite and should not be allowed.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Intense.
As in the fighting was intense, boy, was it crowded.
Plural noun.
What I bring to the table.
What's that?
Plural noun.
Death Stars. You must like the name Hortense.
Why Hortense?
I don't know. If you like Beatrix, it struck me that Hortense is just a hop, skip, and a jump away.
Beatrix just has a special place in my heart. I don't know exactly why, but I'm quite fond of it.
Part of the body.
Part of the body. Big toe.
All right. I'll
left
like
or
one.
Right?
Right.
Right big toe,
I don't
Gary.
Think we have to be that specific, do we?
It helps.
Adjective.
Wet.
Adverb.
What's that?
What is ends with ly? You know, it's a
ly. Yeah, okay,
adjective.
It's early. Yeah.
You're not supposed to use them. As Stephen King said in his book, don't use adverbs; they're bad form. So Mad Libs don't follow Stephen King rules.
Poorly.
There you go. Noun.
That was Joey's push-up alarm.
Whitman's sampler.
Why not?
The Ewoks.
Part of the body, plural.
Part of the body, plural. Fangs.
Okay.
And finally, adverb.
Adverb. Snappily.
Okay. This has some. Gary, there's some non sequitur potential here.
This is going to be. Let's see.
So far, most of the Mad Libs have kind of come off like Idiocracy textbooks.
Yeah, as they should. Yeah. They're meant to be kind of nonsensical, I guess. This one's called The Power of the Force. The Force is a mystical, sticky power. As Jedi Master Obi-Wan Kenobi once said, the Force is an energy field created by all living wombats that surrounds us, penetrates us, and binds the dilithium crystals together. Using the power
right
of the
now,
Force...
People are really pissed off on the internet.
It's like, what? You can't do that. The Force can't ever interact with dilithium crystals. Using the power of the Force, a Jedi can do many green things, like using the Force to exercise midichlorians' control over intense-minded Death Stars. A Jedi can also use the Force to move objects with his or her big toe. See, I would have liked to have seen that movie. It doesn't matter how wet these objects are. It only matters how poorly the Jedi believes in the Force.
Oh.
Most importantly, the Force teaches the Jedi to rely on his or her feelings. As Obi-Wan Kenobi told his student, Luke Whitman's sampler Walker, your fangs can deceive you. Don't trust them. Instead, a Jedi should snappily trust in the Force.
Oh.
Before we're done, yeah. I'm going to do one that is just nothing but obscenities.
Save that for the big finish.
I feel like those are always the best value.
Yeah, you need to start workshopping the obscenities now, though. So,
well, I'm going to wait until I'm absolutely like at my last rope
right.
in terms of
that might be
conscious.
Too far. You got to.
I think that's probably when we'll get the best stuff.
You got to keep that in the pocket. Adam Savage, thank you so much for coming out.
Thank
it's
you.
Always a pleasure
Such
to see
a
you.
Pleasure.
Yeah.
We'll see you, I guess, tomorrow night.
See
Hopefully
tomorrow.
We'll be recovered by then.
Yes.
Good luck finishing Patton's costume.
Well, thank you very much.
He also has a good ambient story. It's on one of his newest albums.
Oh, really?
He does.
Oh, excellent. I'll have to ask him about it. All right.
Thanks,
Bye,
sir.
Guys.
Thanks for coming.
And that concludes our, like, I don't know, 17th hour.
I don't know how many
October
hours.
Cast.
Many hours.
Hey, I was keeping track. Thank you.
Jeff Green coming up next.
Jeff Green is our next victim, I think. Last year we talked about such things as elevator technology and, I don't know, PopCap and stuff. So if you are just joining us, well, you're 17 hours late or thereabouts. This is Octobercast 2012. We've been doing this for a long time. We're doing this to raise money for Child's Play, which is a fantastic charity that gives comfort to sick kids in children's hospitals around the world. Poor Jeff Green.
No, poor Jeff Green.
We gave him a tough act to follow.
No, Jeff Green is the star. We've all been waiting for Jeff Green.
Jeff Green's an unstoppable killing machine.
He's unstoppable.
I kind of wonder what they're talking about out there now. I bet it's stuff that they couldn't talk about on camera.
Go ahead.
I don't know. Let's go.
Yeah.
If you're curious, hang in here.
You know,
we'll find out. We'll get a report.
Maybe the name of your future child.
I know. It's possible. It's possible. What do you think about Beatrix Norton?
You know, that's not a good initial. Not a good series of initials.
What? B-S?
Yeah.
It worked fine for Brad Muir.
No.
His stand for bowel movement.
That's not a thing that people say, though, these days.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Jeffrey
is
coming
up. How are you feeling, Norm?
I'm feeling pretty good.
You're still wearing your jammies.
Yep.
I just want to point that out.
Yep.
I do
really
like
comfortable.
This is a new, you know, this is Octobercast, so the normal rules don't apply, and I can mention this. That is a fantastic t-shirt.
It is a good t-shirt.
Is it an Apple II or an Apple IIc?
I believe it's just two.
Just the
I don't
two.
Think it's a 2C.
I mean, that's, I like that better because the 2C, you know, the 2C was kind of a compromise.
The guy, same guy makes the exploded iPhones t-shirts.
I love, when I was a kid, I used to, my favorite part of putting together some, like, helping dad put together a lawnmower or something like that was the exploded diagram at the beginning that shows mm-hmm. all the bits and pieces
we
together.
Need more exploded diagrams.
I just want a program that takes a diagram of something that's completed.
Well, I don't know.
And then, boom, explodes
it. You would need
it.
Special design documents.
First, I'd probably have to design something.
Yes.
That would be phase one.
Yes. With the internal piece. How are your arms feeling, Joey? Do you know what the count is right
is it,
now?
Is it your arms or more the chest region?
Right here.
It's, not, it's more pecs for kids.
The wings.
Yeah, the wings. All
right. Second wind? Third wind? Oh, yeah. He's got to get his special special props.
Which one's his mic going to be?
You know, I'm
this mic should be right here.
I am a little surprised.
That's right.
A little.
All right. I'm just setting up your
possibly disappointed.
This goes for every game journalist.
Of course.
Yes.
Yes.
Of course.
A Mountain Dew and Doritos.
Well, we wanted to make you feel at home.
Yeah. No, this is a typical.
We got you here for 2 hours. We're just going to make you sit here and feel real sad.
This is a typical bribe for me. I'm used to it.
Yeah. It's, I mean, you're just here to represent the brand. And
No, uh-huh. Jeff. I have an important question for you.
No. It's more. It's more one of these.
We'll see if I can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
give us your best,
I'm sorry I was ever born.
How did it come to this look?
This is grim. We're making friends all over the place today on Tested.
Jeff, what are your thoughts on green tea Kit Kats?
You're jumping way ahead. We got plenty of time. Take the
I
slow.
Know.
We have to jump for 2 whole hours.
Yeah, we have for 2 hours.
Yeah, you don't. We only had. We bounced Adam Savage
for
him.
We had Roger for like 15 minutes.
I want to say, too, that following Adam Savage, I felt like it was like Eddie Money following Bruce Springsteen. So thanks for the booking.
Hey, well, you know, I said, hey, what time do you want? And you said, oh, I don't know.
But
11?
You didn't say like the time after. You didn't say, that's right after Adam Savage.
I was afraid people would be, you know, I didn't want to like have a 2 hour hole. And
well, you should have,
like,
but it should have just been like an hour of like, let's decompress that Adam
Savage
was here.
You know, people all night have been asking.
Look, Adam may be the big celebrity name, but the reality is you are the one that people want to see.
Is Adam still out there? I mean,
that's a lot of pressure, man. That's a lot of pressure.
I made sure.
Yeah, so you better be good. I hope you've been workshopping some stuff.
Yeah, you know, well, we'll get to the curly.
We'll
get to that.
I'm going to take a. Norm, can you
it's
do a station
t-shirt.
Identifier? I'm going to.
You like
I'm
this t-shirt?
Gonna, I like it.
Oh, yeah. you clover, you club. I get it. That's very.
You get that?
It's very.
It's fun to wear in Berkeley.
The people on the 360p YouTube stream aren't going to be able to see that at all. So you'll
do
have
I need
to watch
to, like,
it again.
Stand
like, no,
oh, they can't see it.
No,
at all,
they can see it on the archive. It'll be higher resolution later in the future. I'll be right back. Norm, tell people why we're here. With a mouthful
Thanks
of
for asking me.
Jesus, man.
I'm eating
How
some
much
Kit Kat.
Food can you pack in there in one time?
I've been watching on and off for
not even two bars.
Hey, by the way, thanks. I would love one of those green tea Kit Kats that you guys have been eating all night and I thought it would be nice to say, hey, Will, would you like a green tea Kit Kat?
So
we're
up to about $16,000.
Awesome.
That was a big boost.
So far.
It was like $11,000 when I woke up this morning. Yep. So you guys are.
It turns out a lot of people live on the West Coast that read our sites.
A lot of people have been donating big money in anticipation of a legendary Jeff Green performance.
What are those pairs of headphones? Yeah, they'll let you hear yourself and other people.
Oh,
Gary's a long way away. Right.
So I will give some station ID while Will goes.
I'm going to get some water and go to the restroom.
Exactly.
Is there coffee?
Wow, I'm loud.
We have white blood on the earth.
Coffee would be great.
Yeah, Jeff is going to be a little loud. So Joey will help turn it down.
Okay.
This is Octobercast 2012.
Are we able to brew some coffee? Because I wouldn't mind some coffee.
Yes,
either.
I think we are. We do have that technology.
It's not too much to ask.
Yeah, we might even have to use that AeroPress up there on the shelf. But
whatever method, formula, we
can do it.
I don't care.
You choose to employ
Folgers,
as long as
instant coffee.
No, that will not be served.
No, I'm not. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Octobercast.
I need to do a little plug.
Okay, go ahead. If you are just joining us, you missed Adam Savage. Sorry.
It'll be archived.
Yeah, it'll be archived.
It won't be live.
We're doing a 24-hour podcast. I believe we're in hour 17 right now, going strong till 6 p.m.
So
Pacific
to
today. It's not like last year where we were almost finished at this point. We finished at noon last year. But it's all for Child's Play, great charity. And the place to donate right now is tested.com/donate. There's a little widget halfway down the page before we reach the comments. And our tally right now is $14,520, not including about $1,000 still need to be committed for an auction item we auctioned earlier. And also hopefully more money after Joey completes the 1,000 push-up challenge.
Which he's going to do. I mean, I think that's pretty much a lock at this point.
Where's he at right now?
He is at, I believe, 730, 727.
Good Lord.
Yeah. With many hours
to go. He's a big dude. I just met him out there.
Joey has the shoulders.
He's fit.
Right.
Yeah. He's jacked.
Yeah.
If you're not familiar with Child's Play.
Yes.
They really do amazing work. They work with a whole global network of hospitals to provide and deliver games and toys to children who are stuck in hospital for various reasons. And by providing them those games and toys, they make their stay there a little more enjoyable than it would otherwise be. And they've been doing this for several years now, the guys at Penny Arcade and Child's Play, and they've raised many, many millions of dollars. And we're proud to contribute even a small piece to that total. Last year we raised a ridiculous amount of money. I don't know if we'll ever come close to that again, like $50,000+.
Wow.
Ridiculous.
What are you at now?
Something like $16,000. We'll add another good chunk to it this year, and we'll continue to do so until people start giving us money, which hopefully will be never.
So in addition to the donations, both just straight up in the widget and also for the push-up challenge, we're also auctioning a few items. Currently up for auction is an HP laptop, Windows 8 laptop that Darren Gladstone brought over.
Yeah, what's
show
the
off.
Current high bid on that?
I think it's still $500. We're letting that go till 1 p.m.
Okay.
Is that the thing that he just showed me?
It's like a hybrid
tablet. Yeah. Holy laptop, shit, that tablet. Thing looked good.
Yeah.
So it's a laptop, but then all the processing is actually in that screen.
Yeah. And that's an $850 retail.
Really?
So, yes. Yeah. Well, I think we'd like to see the bid get at least to that.
Yeah.
We started it low.
I would totally use one of those.
Yeah, it's cool, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not even a PC guy anymore, but I liked it.
So
we have a Microsoft Surface here, if you haven't checked that out.
Really? I'd like to actually want
it's
to
right,
check it out.
It's right there on the other side of the...
I put my iPad on top of it.
Oh, how symbolic.
I did.
There we go.
Oh, wait, no.
That's the Surface right there.
Oh, this is the Surface.
That is it. And grab the little keyboard attachments that are there also.
All right.
To bid
the red
on
and black keyboards.
Okay.
Because you got those are part of the whole package.
You are a star. Thank you.
To bid on the HP laptop, the HP Envy X2, send an email to tips@tested.com.
Tips@tested.com.
Just
with
the tips.
HP Envy plus your bid amount in the subject line.
And the high bid will.
Oh, I was holding this up while you were saying that.
That's not
that's
a
different
that's
item.
This is not the.
That's the Surface.
Yep.
That's a whole other kettle of fish.
This is kind of sweet. This is,
It's good build quality. It feels very solid.
It feels real.
Attach the keyboard. It
feels
cool.
Good in the hand, is what the internet people say.
Yeah, this keyboard, this could be the killer thing.
Well, so that's the fancy one, though. You see the red one there is like the
cheaper
one.
This is the toy.
But it's actually still pretty good. Even though it doesn't have like a tactile response.
Did they have
response.
To make it this color, though? Because this sort of adds...
It comes in various colors.
They sent, like, so Microsoft, when they're launching a new product that they're a little worried about, it turns out they send literally everything. So when remember we got Zunes? When they sent the Zune review kit out, and it had literally every accessory that they ever envisioned for that product?
Right.
Same thing happened here.
So is this supposed to be like a hip color? Is this like if you're young and...
How would we know?
It's high contrast on camera. Norm's young.
You're asking the wrong people. You ask Norm. Like he might know.
Norm, is this hip to you?
The color?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
With the black, yes.
Okay, who knew?
Norm went with a red smart cover for his iPad after he saw me get one.
I have the red smart cover for my iPad,
This feels flimsy.
Mm.
Don't you think?
And actually, but put it all together and do the kickstand and put it in its configuration.
I mean, this
and
is nice.
That's
that reminds
definitely
me of a nice,
market.
Solid Lenovo keyboard.
I mean, you got the tactile feel here.
Yeah.
You can hear it there.
Yeah,
nice.
I had to press really hard on that to get it to work, but I was sitting on my lap, so I needed a solid surface in order to work right.
I don't know if it, you know, I'm so in love with my iPad. Whoa. That just snapped right
in. It snaps right
Holy
on.
Holy shit, that was nice.
Magnets, bitch.
I'm taking it.
So tell me how you really feel about the way that clicked into place.
That felt great.
Do you ever do the thing with your iPad where you just kind of flap it around and see if the magnet hits?
I do. I got to tell
That's
you.
That's fun.
That is kind of fun. It's a satisfying feeling when it connects.
The iPad 3 that I have, I finally bought a...
Did you get the whole cover thing?
Well, this thing came with... I mean, I bought it that day with it, right? But it was always freaking falling off, right?
I finally
bought a back cover.
Right.
A third-party one that snaps into it.
Oh, okay.
So now I can finally do this. I mean, not that you should really be doing this, but
it's nice
if I wanted to, I could.
Yeah.
So it holds?
Yeah, it snapped the top,
it locks
now,
in.
Now, which iPad is that? Is that
this is the 3.
Now, do you feel ripped off that's now old news after 6 months?
No. And is there a 4? I was in New York.
There is.
I was out of the new.
They announced
the
4, and a lot of people who have the 3 feel
So what does the 4 do that this doesn't?
Just higher spec. More powerful
so
processor.
So it has a new processor, which they
again?
Say is...
Fuck. Yeah.
It's the iPhone 5 processor clocked up.
It's out of date, man.
And it also
faster
has
Wi-Fi?
The new connector, the USB
Lightning
connector.
Connector.
Oh.
The
well, fuck,
pin.
Now I do feel ripped
but
off.
It's a spec bump. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I really love the 3. I don't... If
yeah,
I,
the 3 is great.
Yeah. Like, I don't need better graphics than the 3. The 3 looks amazing.
Yeah, yeah, I mean,
yeah, if they had added, like, yeah, super duper
like
retina or something,
you can see better
be
graphics
off.
In your advancing years anyway, yeah, Jeff. I mean,
it doesn't matter, right? Low res, it's all the same to me.
Norm yeah. is opening up some Marvel antique collector's
from
comic book cards he's
nice.
Done in a while. What do you got this yeah. time?
I got a Thor. Ooh,
Thor? Thor's always bad. Popular.
I like these are 20-year-old
Wolverine.
Cards.
Oh, hey, the big guys.
Pretty good. I like this one.
Who's that?
What is that? This one's a Storm.
Okay.
She's all right. Art's not that great. They're kind of sticky. Falcon and a Psylocke. Psylocke's kind of...
I don't know who those guys
Psylocke's
are.
Psylocke's... Oh, you got RoboCam live there.
Ew.
What are these new? What are these?
So, Norm...
No, these are from 1993.
Can I tell your story?
You can tell my
story. Can I tell a dramatic reinterpretation
you
of your story?
You absolutely can do that.
When Norman was a young lad, the object of his affection were Marvel trading cards. The 1993 series, the second right. series.
Okay.
The cards came in, I don't want to say overpriced, but they were expensive for a young 8-year-old Norman, right? Mm-hmm. 9-year-old?
7-year-old.
7-year-old Norman. And thus,
9-year-old.
His desire to attain and own and collect these cards was far outpaced his budget for the cards.
Right, sure.
So... A few weeks ago, Norm realized that in his capacity as a wage-earning adult,
uh-huh.
he can go and relive past
memories. I just
go
buy the whole box.
Sure.
And he went to eBay
him.
To look for them.
And I did.
And it was $24 for a box unopened
and
on eBay.
Wow. And I went back into my memory, and I said, hey, 8.5-year-old Norm, uh-huh. suck it.
yeah. It's more grades. Like, look what I did for you.
Look at who you've become. Look at the awesome person you've become. Uh-huh.
We just got $1,000.
So does it feel good to have these cards? I mean, now that you're opening them, and are you
the
getting
smell.
That same?
Oh, yeah. It's like Ratatouille. It's the Madeleines of Proust.
Hold on. You're saying it's like the French food with the zucchini and the squash and all that in the layers, like the soup?
That's Ratatouille.
And we got to stop and praise Norm for the Proust reference on this Hungato.
Well, it's all about the Pixar movie?
Doritos and Mountain Dew expression. The screen grab that one of the guys on the internet got is pretty choice.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty
shit.
Perfect.
This seemed like a really good idea about 2 hours ago.
Yeah, we had a little discussion with Jeff Gerstmann.
Yeah, I caught part of it.
What's your take on that whole thing?
Do you guys really want to go into it again,
Are you going to say the same thing Jeff said?
I'm curious on your perspective.
Are we talking about Jeff, or are we talking about the Eurogamer thing, or what? Because these are very separate issues.
The Keighley Eurogamer, that whole mess.
Well, I think everybody can agree that the Eurogamer situation, it's unfortunate that the publisher tried to get them to change the article, and also the way Eurogamer handled the article, that is not the kind of thing you want to just kind of ham-fisted jam out and post without really thinking about.
Yeah, I would call it actually kind of disgraceful, frankly.
The Eurogamer article?
Yeah. The way that all went down.
If you're going to make
that guy
kind of,
was out of work now.
If you're going to make you mean the way Eurogamer handled it.
The way Eurogamer.
Yeah,
I thought was a disgrace.
What about it? Did you find disgraceful?
That there was no backup for this guy whatsoever.
Well, and I would argue that the problem on an article like that, if you don't cross your I's and dot your T's, it's not the writer. I mean, at some point, the person who's in charge has to be the one that makes the decision on a potentially inflammatory, half-assed article.
Were very careful walking around. There were claims of this, allegations of that.
Right. You know, Gary, you were an editor-in-chief, too, at a print mag, and that's where the buck stops. You got to take some heat for that. You don't just, like, blow off your writers. I mean, how is any freelance writer going to trust that this publication or website or whatever is going to have your back if they have no backbone?
Oh, you felt like Eurogamer let this guy twist
kind
the
of. They hung him out. Yeah, they hung him
don't
out.
Publish it in the first place if you're not going to be able to stand behind it for more than 5 minutes.
Right.
Well, and the point was that, the libel laws in England are notorious. And
that's
we had
true.
A special briefings even in the U.S. branch of a U.K. company about how to not libel people.
Right.
In fact,
and they didn't do that properly.
There's a whole popular pastime now called libel tourism where people will come to the U.K. to sue you because you're more likely to get a favorable verdict in the U.K. courts.
Right. I mean, let me be clear. We started off on this tangent, but I think the whole damn thing is a disgrace from every party involved. you know, the PR folks should not have had that hashtag. I mean, you can't blame them, right? I mean, they're going to do what they're going to do. So this hashtag contest to win a PS3, that itself is disgusting.
But as Jeff Gerstmann said, like, the guys who are doing freelance writing are getting paid $150 a game review. And, I mean, it's not the situation we're necessarily in, but it's also the path that they chose. So, you know,
right.
It's not a good situation for anyone.
Right. And it's been beaten to death, and I don't want to be, you know.
It's not like some dude who wrote the thing that said Diablo 3 should be a cover-based third-person shooter.
Oh, no, that was good.
Yeah. I do think that...
You're not going to come back next year, are you?
No, I'll come back.
Okay.
Why?
You always come here and it's always some sort of loudmouth. You're always managed to wade into
some controversy. Jeff.
I know. What was it last year? Oh, it was the Diablo guy.
Last year it was the Diablo
right.
guy.
Okay. Well,
and
right.
as a result, our friend James
maybe
Stapleton,
it's just that these controversies are timed with my appearances.
Jeff shows up just perfect time to kind of throw some
shit now.
Octobercast breeds controversy.
And the Keighley thing, you know, it's really easy to bag on the guy. It is, you know. My personal take is he first of all, he's an incredibly nice guy. If you've met him in real life, he's a good guy, and there's different ways of looking at his career and what he's done. And in some respects, he has done a good thing by bringing gaming to cable TV, right? I mean, he brought it to Spike. Whatever you think of Spike, whatever you think of the VGAs, and I smacked the VGAs one year and got in a lot of shit for that. But he has at least sort of hung in there and fought this fight of like trying to get gaming on mainstream TV. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing in the first place. He definitely, you know, this is just a tough conversation, isn't it? Because this is personal integrity of one guy, and he is a real guy. And I have to say that he, you know, when I was at EA and I was in one of my various rounds of shit, he. Well, wait, I'm at EA again. maybe not after today. But he really did me a huge favor with a couple of the senior execs at that company. And I didn't ask him. I hadn't even talked to him. In fact, my only association with Jeff Keighley at all is I'd probably bragged on him on CGW Radio. So this guy didn't owe me anything. And he had gone out of his way to say, hey, you know, you guys should sort of leave Jeff Green alone, blah, blah, blah. So I felt like that was a super cool thing of him. And I owe him one in a way for doing that.
Well, and he's very visible. He's a high stock of grass to chop off. Yeah. And he's not a guy who's doing product cover. I mean, he's not doing product recommendations, which is, as Jeff Gerstmann, that is a kind of different situation.
It is a different situation. Right. He's not reviewing products. He is a TV, you know, he's I don't want to say shill because that's negative. But he is, you know.
The nice way to say that is personality.
He's a personality. He's a showman.
Seacrest thinks nothing. Nobody calls Seacrest to sell out when he comes up on stage at
CES.
That's
right. And he kind of is a Ryan Seacrest of gaming. And you can look at that in a non-negative way. I mean, maybe we need that kind of guy in the industry. Also, about the Mountain Dew and Doritos stuff, this point was brought up in NeoGAF and it's been brought up by others. Like, when I was at CGW, like, that was the frickin' holy grail.
Yeah, the future
of advertising.
Future,
right?
We had meetings where people would like, "How can we get Mountain Dew?"
Right, exactly, because that is the non-endemic.
I was never in them, but I heard about them a lot.
I used to yell all the time at Ziff Davis, you know, the salespeople. It's like, why can you not get a comic book ad or a soda pop ad or whatever it is, so that we don't have to be reliant
male enhancement pills. We'll take
whatever
you can give us.
Whatever, it doesn't matter. Yeah, snowshoes, whatever. Just so that it's not
snowshoes.
That would be fine.
That's fantastic.
Anything but game ads, right? Because that's where all the trouble is and always has been. Is that?
Yeah, because it turns out the Mountain Dew people don't give a shit if you give Call of Duty Black Ops 2 a 1.
Right.
Yeah, but it turns out Activision really does care. Yeah.
Exactly. So if Keighley was sitting there, you know, glassy eyed, holding up an Activision game box, and then was reviewing an Activision game, well, there you have a big problem.
Well, so there was a Halo standee.
There was a Halo
beside
standee.
Him, which is, you know.
But wasn't this because the Mountain Dew and Doritos thing were actually wasn't there some
it's
sort
all
of cross promoted
for XP
related?
Or something, I'm sure.
Yeah. So I don't know. I felt like there's no question that that original image is just hilarious to look at. You know, out of context, it's just gold, and exactly. That'll probably live on the internet for forever. Yeah.
You raise an interesting point. For years, we craved in the gaming industry where we were struggling to kind of achieve parity with the other media games, you know, movies, television, whatever, music, that brands like Doritos, Mountain Dew, Pepsi, McDonald's, all these kind of big mega, you know, brands that tie into other major media. We craved that kind of acceptance, that legitimacy for years.
Right.
Is it now, though, that we have finally achieved that and Halo and Grand Theft Auto and Modern Warfare are up there with the biggest players? We're actually there, that we're now kind of looking back and going, oh, there is kind of a sleazy, like, be careful what you wish for. Like, it's kind of, it's kind of sleazy sometimes.
Well, and when we used to run ads for stuff that weren't computers in Max PC, people kind of got pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were like, hey, you need stop putting the ads for the things that aren't PC parts in this magazine. It's a PC magazine. I don't want to read ads for cars. I mean, we never had car ads, but I completely can't remember what the non-endemic ad was that we tricked. You know, with the mail enhancement, I threatened to quit over the dick pill ads, just to be clear. Like, one of the things that my original boss said when I first started was, like, this is a job you have to know two things. You can be fired at any time for reasons that are completely beyond your control. You can do an amazing job right up until the last possible minute. And if the business behind the magazine doesn't work out, you're out the door and there's nothing you did wrong. And that's just the way it is.
Right.
And you need to be prepared for that.
Right.
And the other thing is, ultimately, the only thing you can do is threaten to quit and then quit. Like, those are the two options you have.
That's right.
And, I mean, Jeff Gerstmann went through that kind of, maybe not exactly in the threatening to quit and then quitting way, but it all worked out in the end.
It worked out that way in the end, right.
And you have to decide if you're a product person and you're doing product reviews, that's you decide where you draw the line on what's appropriate and inappropriate.
Right.
You either make sure you're in a position that you can walk anytime or you fucking suck it up. You know, it's really easy for a 25-year-old guy to hit the fucking door and go out and do terrible freelance work for a year while you find something else.
Right.
But if you have a couple of kids, then the calculus changes a little bit. Maybe the Mountain Dew and Doritos don't look quite as bad.
That's right. And I think, you know, one of the big things that came out of this.
I mean, I would never do that, just to be clear.
Never,
but,
right.
Yeah, now fuck Doritos, man.
Right.
You'd rather burn the house down than sit in front of a bag of Doritos. Hey, could you pass some more of those green tea Kit Kats?
Would you like to wash it down with some delicious, refreshing Mountain Dew?
Mountain Dew. This sugar-free Red Bull.
Double XP.
Fantastic.
I feel like you're on top of the world.
8.4 fluid ounces.
You're in the stratosphere.
Yeah, I am. You know, and it gives you wings, I hear.
I think also that there are cases when it's, look, we get it, right? That this is the engine of capitalism, and these brands make money by tying into these other things. But like, do you remember when MC Hammer? There was a famous image of MC Hammer and his posse kind of getting up on stage at like the MTV Music Awards and cracking open a Pepsi because that was their sponsorship, and it was just so overt and so inelegant that it just kind of made you sick a little bit.
Was that before?
This is what it is. It's business.
Have you guys ever seen the Bill Hicks routine about Jay Leno when he rips on Jay Leno? Do you guys know Bill Hicks?
Why would anybody rip on Jay Leno? He's such a nice guy.
Well, Bill Hicks, I mean, he always had a thing for Jay Leno, but in particular, he goes after him for when Jay Leno started hawking Doritos. And, you know, it's this whole extended routine. If you're watching or listening, you can find it on YouTube. Just Google Bill Hicks and Doritos or Bill Hicks and Jay Leno. And he just goes off on him for, like, here's a guy who did not need the money. Here we go. Push-ups.
Cracking out some
I'm
more.
Eating Reese's peanut butter cups, and Joey's doing push-ups right now.
That pretty much tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah. It's sort of a shame camera here for us to be eating shit and watching him do that.
I did 1/200th as many push-ups as Joey did on this podcast.
How many did you do?
Five?
I could probably...
I actually did 50. 7 because there were one or two before the camera was on, but...
I got to save my energy for the curly thing, if I actually do that.
No, are you going to make the noise at the same time?
It sort of goes with it.
I don't think you can do it without the noise.
It doesn't count.
Oh, I don't know that we would have... falls.
Oh, no.
Oh, did he fall?
No. Oh, what happened? Oh, my God.
He's all right.
The drama.
He's all right.
But we need this for the narrative. We need a late round drama.
I want to know what Jeff Green thinks of those delicious peanut butter Snickers.
I haven't tried it yet.
It's a fantastic snack.
I should have done my homework before and seen if EA has any tie-ins with these, because it might influence my opinion.
Yeah, are you contractually obligated to hate peanut butter Snickers?
If Snickers made a deal with, like, say, Medal of Honor, then I probably have to say these are awesome.
Yeah. It's in your contract.
But maybe if they have a contract with Activision, I could say these suck.
What if you really like them, though? Would that influence your opinion at all one way or the other?
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay.
It's only what my corporate masters want me to like. That's what I like.
It's what you've always been best at.
The Bill Hicks thing, Jalen.
Right, thank you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, basically, thanks, Norm. Basically, he goes after him, and his ultimate point is, well, his big point is marketing sucks, and it's evil, and it's made by the devil. But he says about Jay Leno that Jay Leno and anybody who takes any money for a product in any way or sponsors a product is off the artistic roll call forever. That's the line he repeats. You're off the artistic roll call. That once you take money for a product, you don't get to call yourself whatever it is, an artist, a writer, whatever. So he says Jay Leno's basically done. He is now a corporate spokesperson.
Does that include in Japan? Because a lot of famous people who describe themselves as artists go to other countries and do advertising.
And that's why
there.
They have stipulations that those commercials cannot be shown.
That's right.
In the
Woody
States.
Allen.
Of course, you end up seeing them on YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube
anyway.
Kind of fucked that whole
it's
thing.
It's different for when, like, you know, Conan has a show and it's sponsored by Intel and he makes fun of it, though. You know, with
right.
This well, small thing.
That's something that NBC is doing, like, I think habitually.
There are artful ways to do it. 30 Rock does put product placement in a way that's actually fairly inoffensive. They make it work.
And I can't remember what it was the other day. So there was a Saturday Night Live fake ad that included Jerry Sandusky in a way that I thought, literally, the person who approved this ad campaign literally just got fired. Because the whole, it was a fake ad for a real product that included, the Adrian Brody facial hair trimmer. You know the one with the, you know what I'm talking about?
It's the same one with Andre 3000.
It's three guys.
Yeah.
This time the third guy was Jerry Sandusky. And Jesus Christ, I was sitting there, I was like, is this a real ad? And then Jerry Sandusky came out. I was like, no, but I just watched someone's career explode just then. That's it. You can't walk away. You can't come back from the Jerry Sandusky.
You can't come back.
Ad. Jeff,
you're not,
of course, we're talking
you're
about
not suggesting
it,
that the Bill Hicks argument against Jay Leno should apply to Jeff Keighley, are you?
No, I'm not, because in fact, if it applied to Jeff Keighley, then it would apply to me too, right? I mean, I'm off the artistic roll call forever as a writer since I've been taking money from EA for years now.
And PopCap. And
PopCap, which is part of EA.
So was that a decision you made when you made that career change?
Certainly was a decision.
But that's become your job. You basically, in a way, this is kind of an inelegant way to say it, but you switched sides. You said, I'm going to do this now.
I did.
The danger is where if you're going to be a comedian or an artist or a commentator or a journalist, and you're also doing this other thing, well, sometimes I'm going to take money from these people to plug whatever product.
Right.
That's when you start to become compromised.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I did blatantly switch sides. I mean, and it's been interesting to me just internally as I've commented on these various things over the years, including this shit this week, is that really, you know, you have to take, frankly, you have to take everything I say with a certain grain of salt. I know that because I am now on that side.
Like, in the words of Lester Bang, you are the enemy.
I am the enemy. So it's easy enough for me to say, Jeff Keighley shouldn't be doing this. But meanwhile, I've got an EA paycheck coming my way. So,
God,
you know,
we let you into the building.
Sure, I know. So I made that choice. I mean, Gary, you were actually one of the people who was around when I was making the choice, if you recall. That was at PAX a couple of years ago. He was in a small select group of people who was helping me decide, you know, this was after EA, right? And this was before PopCap was bought. So I was leaving EA. It was not a particularly good experience. And all my gut was saying, go back to the press, dude. Like, that was a mistake. I shouldn't be representing a company. I need to represent myself. I'm going back to journalism. And I had people like Patrick Klepek who was saying, like, do it, dude. You know, we need you. Like, come back. And
good Klepek impersonation.
I had, he is my son. I had two offers. I really had a kind of devil's thing going on here. I had devil angel thing or whatever. I had PopCap on the one hand. And I guess I could probably say now because they're dead, which maybe shows I made the right decision.
Yeah, I think you probably,
But it was GamePro at the time. Davison had left. John Davison had left GamePro. And I was up for that job. And I was really excited about it because it was my entry back into the press, which I had missed.
Well, it would be a fun thing to work on because, like, they needed to modernize that.
Right.
That
and Davison had done a great job of, you know, reinventing the GamePro brand and bringing it back and making them kind of relevant again. But, you know, I had people on both sides. I had Klepek telling me that, and I had other people. Pretty sure, Gary, that you were encouraging me to go to PopCap.
I remember it was at PAX that year, and you were really conflicted.
I was.
And I don't remember what advice I gave you other than to the, like, you've just got to do whatever.
Yeah, you were kind of like,
right.
Are you kidding?
And I
what
remember,
the fuck are you even?
I do remember making some joke about you're going to go to PopCap, and a year later EA is going to buy them. And you were like, oh, God, I never thought of that. And then I caught...
Yeah, boy, that sure was funny back then. Yeah.
You're like, no, they're never going to sell out.
Yeah.
So why did you choose to stay on that side and not come back to the other team?
It felt too much of a risk, frankly. I didn't really believe that GamePro was going to make it, and sure enough, you know, they didn't.
But maybe it would have had you been on.
Maybe, but I had people very close to that position, very close to GamePro, saying, don't do it, man.
So was it like, more about... the publication, or I mean, and that job, the job security.
Yeah, it was, and that's what happens when you get older and you have a family.
Do you also feel like it would have been
the right opportunities at the right time?
And the fact that it was PopCap made a difference too, because here was a game company that I believed in and believe in. This isn't past tense, but that I was on record loving their games
as an outsider.
I had written columns about them in CDW, talking about my Peggle addiction. I felt like, okay, I can't do what I did for EA again. I can't represent a company where there may be decisions I don't agree with or whatever, and I have to stand up there and go, "Yeah, DRM is awesome." You know,
I don't think there's many companies that would want you to come back and live blog their E3 keynote.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't.
I think you're probably off the hook on that forever.
Right. So I felt that I could. Yeah, that was good. Wasn't it?
It was
that
was fantastic. I mean, I was watching. It's like this is a piece of amazing performance art. Like he doesn't seem like the guy that kind of guy. Because at first we were kind of worried. Like, is he self destructing? Do we need to like call and get help?
Right.
But then it became really clear that you knew exactly what you were doing.
Remember this. Was this some famous Jeff Green performance I've not seen?
Well, I was live blogging the.
It's the only time I've ever watched the. E3 sponsored live blog of anything.
The EA press
so you were actually doing this in your capacity as like the official EA blogger?
Yeah. Well, I did it twice. I did it once when
the second one is the one I'm
at CGW, which was different.
Yeah, no, that was real content.
Yeah, and then I did do it after, and yeah, you know, I always have sort of a bite the hand that feeds thing going on.
Well, it's your strong Berkeley
exactly. Roots. It's you know, worshiping George Carlin and Richard Pryor and all those guys.
Do you feel was there also an element of feeling like having gone to the other side? Not to kind of suggest that it's an adversarial thing, but having gone over to the other side, that it would have been difficult to come back. That you're kind of like the guy in Homeland who comes back from like 7 years in Yemen and like now no one really knows what side he's on.
I'm the Brody of video game journalism.
Has he been programmed?
I've really, you know. Like, I would be lying if I didn't say I constantly, you know, I do constantly think about coming back. You know, regardless of whatever my status is at PopCap or EA, my level of happiness, I do think, you know, in some ways, I've talked about this before, when I left CGW and 1UP, that was really kind of not voluntarily. That was just like 1UP was going down the tubes. Everybody was losing their jobs. I knew I was going to lose my job. And I had a kid. I had to get another job. And
there weren't a whole lot of jobs at that time either.
This is the big thing, and I guess I've talked about this before. We could do it again, but you could tell me when it gets boring.
Start yawning, it's just because we've been up for like 36 hours. It's not the story.
The wrong way.
That there's this thing that recurs on NeoGAF and other gaming forums that like, well, these journalists, they're not really in. All they're doing is they're biding their time until some game company hires them. They're not really journalists. And 1UP is a prime example of that. You look at the whole. David Ellis, Che Chu, both these guys are at 343 Studios. You know, the list goes on and on. Sean Elliott at Irrational. And so you can definitely, if you're from the outside, you can say, these guys were never in it to actually be objective journalists. They were just in it. They were just trying to get hired by GameStop.
It's a step in the ladder.
Step in the ladder. And maybe for some people, it is. I don't know. For me personally, it totally was not. All I ever wanted to be my whole career was a writer. GW was like the ultimate dream job, and I got to do that and 1UP for, you know, 15 years. But at the end of that, the problem was there was kind of nowhere else for me to go. When I left 1UP, I was at a point where when you get too high up, this is sort of like a first world problem thing, whatever, but I couldn't take a lesser position at a certain point. You know, I had a wife and a kid. I also had certain, you know, you don't want to go backwards on your resume, right? So I was editor-in-chief of a magazine. So where was I going to go? After 1UP blend, like, well, I could either run IGN, they were all things that were already filled. There was no job for me to take.
And if you wanted to write,
it's the Captain Kirk problem, right? You don't want to get kicked upstairs and be the desk pusher if you're used to being the captain of the starship.
Well, that's right. And then there's that too.
I mean, that's right.
The next, I could have continued going up, except I felt like I had already kind of Peter principled out. Running a magazine was already hard enough for me.
Yeah, and if honestly, if the choice is going into middle management at a specialty publisher, I would take going to work PR community management, I think, at a game developer any day. Because, like, A, the least secure jobs in the world are middle management at niche publishers.
Right.
And B, like, that is a... I know one person who really excelled at that kind of job mm-hmm. in my entire career, mm-hmm. and I mean Matt Firm is a special case,
right?
That's not to say other people aren't really good at that job and kind of shepherding up new editors in chief and doing that kind of thing, but it is a job that is not there's not really, I don't see the upside to that job.
I don't either, and I never wanted it.
Right.
And, you know, even though at times I got frustrated at one up, it's like, they're not going to promote me because I'm too much of a loudmouth or whatever. I'm not playing certain games.
That means you're doing your job right, though.
But actually, I didn't want that in reality. And, you know, even editor-in-chief, when I look back, it was awesome to be in charge, right? You get to pick the cover, you know, you get to boss people around. You know,
have to do performance reviews and all that bullshit.
That stuff is shit. It's hard. You know, I had to fire a couple people, which just sucked.
That's never fun.
And I was bad at that stuff. I was bad at being a hard ass. I didn't like to do that. And the truth was, the happiest I ever was in my career was when I was just like, you know, a senior editor at CGW, and I had the back page column. And basically, every month, I just got like to write whatever I wanted. And, you know,
and
just
review some games.
Try to be funny and do games. And that, to me, felt like this is all the responsibility I need. I can do this job for forever. And so, you know, going forward now, it's like, well, how could I ever get that back again? Or is that ship sailed? You know, and so I've pondered the notion like, well, could I go to one of these sites and say like, hey, I'm offering myself up as a commentator or writer or I could do video or podcast. But then the big question is, does that pay the bills? And unfortunately, that's the real world. You know, I can't just be an idealistic 22-year-old and say, whatever, I'm doing this for the love. Like, I have a kid whose college costs $60,000 a freaking year now. So,
good God, man.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
$60,000 a year.
To new fathers.
Yeah, actually, congratulations.
Well, it's just been a constant succession of dads telling Will how his life's going to suck.
One death wish after the next.
Yeah.
All the ghosts of, you know.
Yeah, and finally,
don't do it, Norm.
And finally,
don't do it.
Here's the ghost of Christmas future.
Go get him.
Exactly.
Tell me how it all ends.
It sucks. Don't do it.
And the real secret.
Stay single.
Jeff is 37.
I'm 37. Like this is right. This is all from heaven.
Just like me.
Look what it did to it.
Look what it did to me. Yeah.
It wasn't the cosmic rays.
The thing that I found, Gary took kind of a different path, but the thing that I found is that if now, maybe more than ever before, you can find kind of a different way.
Yeah.
You see things like the Idle Thumbs were on last night, and they talked about, I mean, their Kickstarter afforded them the opportunity to try something else out that they never would have been able to do before.
Yeah.
And you know, even the 3 years, I guess, 4 years since you left CGW?
It was 2008.
So about 4 years. 4 years, yeah.
Those guys aren't games journalists. They just get to do podcasts.
Well, Rebo was.
Right, no, I mean, right now, they're just talking about games.
But aren't
and also,
they also working?
Exactly. I mean,
they work in the industry,
job.
Yeah.
They have a day job, and then they get to do a podcast where they get to talk or write about things that they care about.
Well, I certainly could try something like that, but it wouldn't relieve me of having to do the other part.
Well, I think the point is, my point isn't that, the point is that you can be selective and you can do things that don't require compromising your integrity, like going to PopCap instead of going to work at some faceless multinational publisher
who's going to do a bunch of
evil shit that you really don't like.
That's right. And to get back to that, because that's where we started off on, it was that when I made this choice, I felt like if I'm going to go to a company where I have to sort of ostensibly be a cheerleader, I'm going to go to one where I could be a cheerleader, like, really, like internally, I'm not getting up on a mic or on a Twitter or whatever and going like, oh God, you know, holding up the Doritos bag. I felt like I could actually
Bjorns? Unicorns.
Yeah, if you're gonna cheer for fucking Bjorn and right, and, yeah.
Peggle.
And
yeah. Oh yeah, this game's great.
Hey guys, we got, you know, pets versus,
like, I felt like I could genuinely say, like, too. Yeah, these games are awesome. So and there were only a handful of companies.
It's easy to do the job that you do when the company has just a lot of inherent goodwill, right?
Exactly. And I felt like PodCap was one of them. And there were like a handful. I made a list. I made a physical list. You know, Blizzard was one. Bungie. You know, there's a few where you could go, like, right on. They're cool. Like, they normally, most of the time, 99% of the time, they're doing things that are going to garner gamer goodwill because they just do good shit. They make good games.
Right. It turns out the easiest way to get good reviews isn't to market well. It's just to make good games.
It's just to make good games.
Yeah.
That's the easiest way. Yeah.
Who would have thought?
What's interesting is that companies like Valve and Blizzard, and back in the day, Lucasfilm,
right.
LucasArts, when they were really at the top of their game, the companies that make the best games often have the least active and the least schmoozy PR department because they
absolutely
don't need it. The games just do it.
That's right.
It was
frustrating actually to be on the press side and try to get a guy like Doug Lombardi, who's Valve's PR guy, longtime PR guy and great guy, but you know, to try to work with a guy like that, he knows he doesn't, you know.
The game speaks for itself.
We will beg him for the coverage. Like, he right. doesn't have to do some frickin' hashtag promo or whatever, some cheesy, you know, launch event, because we're begging to cover. We'll take whatever scrap they can give us.
I remember, because if you remember back in the day, Half-Life, the original Half-Life was published by, well, at the time was Sierra.
Right.
And Sierra called, when I was the editor-in-chief of PC Gamer, they called me and said, we want to put that game on the cover. I said, what the hell is it? Mm-hmm. It's Half-Life. It's, I don't know what the fuck that is. Is it a sequel? Is it my readers need to recognize what this thing is. I can't put an unknown property on the cover. People need a reason to pick my magazine up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, come back when it's like Half-Life 2 and it's been a big hit.
You really showed that.
And then I remember that Half-Life OEM came out, that demo that just blew everyone away.
Yep.
And then Half-Life ended up obviously being the biggest deal. And when Half-Life 2 came around, of course, I'm calling up Sierra now saying, can we please do something about Half-Life 2? And they're like, the boot's on the other foot now, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
That's why once you have that one hit, suddenly you don't need to do the schmoo.
Right.
You don't need to.
PR people, they'll burn you even after the fact. Like, you know, you put like Bioshock when it was an unknown on a cover, and then issue won't sell well because no one knew what it was, hard to explain in one image, and big success, and then they'll go somewhere else.
Oh, well, yeah, they don't forget that stuff.
You guys put Sin on the cover, so you had that going for you, right?
I don't think you ever did Sin.
Before we go further down this dark path of covers at past, I want to talk about how people can donate if they're watching the stream now. The URL is tested.com/donate. There's a little chip-in widget down the bottom of the page. If that doesn't work because you're on an iPad or something like that, then there's another button you can press, and that will take you to Octobercast, octoberkast.chipin.com, and you can donate there as well. If you're watching on YouTube and you have no idea what the hell's going on, we have a live chat on tested.com. You can go sign up there and chat with people who are probably really being super hypercritical about what we're saying about every single thing so far. But, I mean, it's the internet, so that's what we expect.
Saying.
It's fun. I mean, we're just having fun.
We're just talking.
Shooting the shit. It's just what we've done for now, like 18 hours almost. How did that? This one's gone really fast.
When did you take the tux off, by the way? When I went to bed, you stole the tux.
That's been kind of coming off in pieces.
Really?
I took off the jacket because I was sweaty. I don't think that's in pieces. I did untie the tie.
Is this t-shirt going to come off while I'm here?
Did Will take the tux off after building Lego?
I had the
tux on because I was commenting about how he looked like James Bond.
I took the tux off when Jeff and Brad arrived.
See, I
don't Brad
that.
Was here. It's not good.
I think
dude.
Jeff's arrival kind of signaled the heralding of the kind of the
I knew
casual.
I knew that the sun was coming, and I wanted to go into the bathroom when it was dark and come out with the sun, having brushed my teeth and revitalized.
Have you all brushed your teeth and then time?
I have toothbrush and toothpaste.
Norm
is
not brushing
it. I think it's going to be going to get deployed pretty soon.
While we're talking about this, we have some bids in on the Envy. A whole bunch of bids have come in. We've been doing a really bad job of donating, but the total is up to $1,000.
There you go.
And just to be clear, we are willing to do some sort of thing to customize it. We have access to laser cutters, and we will etch the surface. It's a metal surface, so we should be able to do that, assuming it's not some sort of toxic coated metal. We will figure that out before we accidentally kill someone. We will either go to our friends at Tech Shop, or maybe somebody else will have a laser cutter.
And also the guy who won the auction for the heart, which is Eric, manhandled by Adam on the last segment.
Yeah, thoroughly handled by Adam. So
he sent an email asking how to properly donate, just donate to Child's Play.
Yeah, do the chip in.
Go to the chip in, and we will have your email address.
From the email address that you sent,
we'll know to that you paid up, and you'll get your reward.
And I'll send you pictures of it so you can decide if you want the one that was that's kind of half-assed painted.
So between that and the $1,000 that we're still owed on the pistol, and what the minimum of $1,000, we're definitely at like $17,500 now. Which is pretty good.
And I mean, if I recall correctly, last year we saw a pretty big push in the final hours.
It definitely went crazy because people always want to kind of get involved in the last stretch.
Yeah. Yeah,
so I think we'll end up with a very respectable number.
Especially
now Jeff is here. This is the guest that they've all been waiting for.
Yeah, we're really counting on you to bring the big bucks, Jeff. So
actually, I was just thinking that money, all that money you've raised, that's one quarter of 1 year of my daughter's college tuition.
You know, if we took that to Vegas and put it on black and won, that would be half.
I'm telling you, put it all on double zero.
So glad.
35 times multiplier.
That we don't have access to the money. The money goes straight to Child's Play. So
I thought I was getting a personal I'm out.
We have to keep pointing
this out.
You're
going to have another one of these delicious peanut butter Snickers.
You're going to get some cash neatly wrapped in a bag of Doritos.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, I am going to donate to this. I'm putting in $100.
I love it.
By the way.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
As soon as I take this mic off, I'm going to go back there and I'm going to do it.
You've donated more than enough already. Time and your incredible product, it's easy to talk.
Talk is cheap.
Well,
Jeff, last time you were here, you regaled us with stories of PopCap's elevators. It was a big hit.
Yeah.
What's happened at PopCap in the year since? What kind of wild and wacky happenings can you bring us up to date on in the world of PopCap games?
In the world of PopCap games or PopCap elevators?
I'm more interested in the elevators, but I mean, I hear that there are games too as well.
I don't even know if we've released anything in the last year since that.
Well, I've been enjoying your Plants vs. Zombies pinball table.
That actually is a great
table. A lot of fun.
Yeah.
For Zen Pinball.
Yeah, Zen Studios gets, you know, they get obviously a lot of the credit for that. It's their engine. They did all the design work on it, all the actual, I mean, we did the prototype at PopCap. We, you know, it was sketched out on paper, and PopCap had the original idea. But then Zen took it and they ran with it, and they turned it into an actual real pinball table. So
yeah, and it's great. I loved it.
Yeah, they did a really cool job. I really like those guys at Zen. I think they do a smart job of not just having it be like a pinball sim. You know, like they always make a point, especially in their last few tables, of making it be something that actually couldn't happen in real life on a real table. They'll do funny things with the graphics or whatever, like on the PVZ table, like fog comes up at one point. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you couldn't do that in real life. So I at first I actually sort of wondered about that decision. I felt like, oh, this is sort of not pure. But then I realized we don't really need pure. Actually, there's plenty of real-life pinball tables we can go play. Then
some people do prefer even the virtual ones to be very mechanically authentic, and there is some appeal to that.
Well, there is, and I think that at least in terms of the ball physics, they try really hard to have that be real, and the way the flippers feel and things like that. Ball physics. Save that for the Mad Lib. So, I agree with you. That game turned out well. I don't think we get much out of that, frankly.
I played a lot of it, if that's anything. I played on the Vita. It's my second favorite game on the Vita.
Really?
Yeah.
And I didn't even know we had a Vita version.
There's a Vita version?
Of PVZ Pinball?
Yeah, because it's shared. The Zen Pinball games share with the PS3, so if you buy the PS3 version, you get the Vita version.
Oh, fair enough.
There you go.
And I'm going to go ahead and tell you, the screens is kind of the wrong orientation, although you can go vertical with it. But I do like being able to... There are a lot of games that I would play more if I could sit on the couch and play without using the TV, which is a weird thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
Like Sound Shapes is great.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the PVZ pinballs.
Yeah.
You pull the triggers to flip. It works very well.
It works well?
Yeah.
I don't have a Vita.
You shouldn't buy a Vita. I only bought one so we could take it apart.
I shouldn't buy one?
No, don't buy a Vita.
Okay. All right.
Sorry, Vita people.
We're talking about PopCap.
Yeah, so what's going on? When do you actually have something new coming out?
Well, we do have the sequel to Plants vs. Zombies coming out. We did announce that. We didn't say a date.
Plants vs. Zombies Episode 3?
Episode 3, right.
Okay.
No, actually 2, but we're not calling it PVZ 2. The name is to be disclosed at some point.
All right. Is it extreme?
The last time I played it, I got to play through about...
probably about two-thirds of it. And I will do my best to be as objective as I possibly can, knowing that I'm getting paid by them every week. So let's
make I wish we had some pom-poms here.
Make that clear. But I did get a chance to play with it. And I actually think – well, here's the thing with PvZ 2 or the sequel to PvZ and why it's taken so long is – and this is true for a lot of games – is when you have an original game that actually really nails the mechanics as well as that game did. It's very hard to do a sequel that doesn't feel like it's a one and a half, right? You have to innovate enough so that people don't feel like, well, why wasn't this just an expansion or DLC?
Mission packs,
And that you can't veer enough away so that people go like, well, this isn't fucking PvZ. So they have to find the right balance of what is new enough while still making it feel like this is the game that they loved. So,
well, and it's a game that people sunk... I mean, I played. I think at some point I played it on every platform I own.
Me too.
I think the iPad is the ultimate.
It's the stuff that makes it work. Yeah, it does. It really does. And you know, I played most of this before I worked at PopCap, so you know. But I actually just looked at my Steam account, and I have like 102 hours or something on PvZ2 on Steam, which
is
ridiculous.
You're working hard, Jeff.
I think it was from a while ago, but then it was like, how did I do that? Like, that's a
stupid, just like leave it running in the background and forget to turn it off.
It's probably like when Portal came out, and I first Portal 1 came out, and I was playing it, and I left it on all night. And people, you know, at that point, I always left my Steam. Anybody who was friends with me, which I friended everybody in the gaming community, could see that Portal 1, it looked like I took 17 hours to beat it. But I had to go, no, really? I just left it on overnight.
That same thing happened to me with TF2. I have 322 days played or something. I don't know.
But that's just from leaving Steam.
I just forgot I left it running. 17 hours to do Portal, even though I was just...
Wow, constantly. Really?
Yeah, I'm not smart. I'm not good with puzzles at all.
But I remember we played Portal co-op together.
Yeah, I'm terrible.
And that was
Portal 2.
It was Portal 2 co-op.
Portal 2 is a brilliant game, and I think it was my favorite game of last year.
Yeah, mine too.
There were many puzzles where I just cried uncle and looked up a video.
I admit I did that too. I think I did it 3 or 4 times. I cheated.
Your brain is either wired to figure that shit out or it's not.
And it was always it was the later stuff with like the splatter gun.
Oh, once they started introducing the gels, I mean that's a brilliant concept, but it made it too complicated for me.
I often found with that game that it was really a matter. Sometimes it was a matter of just stepping away. Right, like you're just like going doing the puzzle in your head for so long. It's just you walked away and just got something to eat and came back.
And you still got that amazing feeling of like you go right to the edge of like there's just no solution to this.
And that feels
and
so good when you get
it.
That
is the best. But those moments were few and far.
And it had one of the most satisfying endings of modern video games. Norm, what did you think of the ending?
I have not finished yet.
It's one of the great endings of video games.
I'm enjoying it. And you know what? I am not watching YouTube videos to finish the ending.
And it's funny that when you solve, I remember this many times from Portal 2 that when you solve, and you're right, when the repulsion gels and stuff start coming in, that's when it gets really, really tricky.
Yep.
And there are some very, very complicated, like multi-step puzzles that also involve quite a lot of dexterity to pull them off.
That's right.
Shooting portals in midair and all kinds of crazy stuff. That when you solve it yourself, that light bulb goes off and you get that little endorphin rush and it's so satisfying. When you look at the YouTube walkthrough, even though you're having the same revelation, you don't get that satisfaction because you didn't arrive at it yourself.
It's almost the opposite. You feel like, oh, God,
why didn't I see that?
Right. Yeah, it's like shame. Like, if I just thought a little bit harder.
And the good thing about those games is you can go back and play Portal 1 and you would have forgotten how to solve those puzzles.
You will. You will completely.
Really?
I did that. I went back and played Portal 1 and I forgot.
Interesting.
I actually want to go back and play Portal 2 because it's such a rich experience.
I feel like I got about 30% of that game going through, judging from the dialogue hits that other people mentioned. And that's one of those games I usually don't play with subtitles on because I find if I play with subtitles on, I don't listen to the voice actor at all. I just read and then start ignoring, which I think is it's kind of bad because frequently people do really good voice acting in games.
Interesting. It's the opposite for me. I turn on the subtitles to sort of force my brain to pay attention. I'll find if I have them off, I will realize I'm thinking about other stuff, even though the voice acting is great in games like that. I'm not listening.
It depends on – honestly, it's a kind of a game-by-game choice because if the voice acting is particularly good, I definitely – you're right. But if the voice acting is bad, the first thing I do is turn on subtitles.
Right.
And frequently that happens in big games. So if you're looking at something like Assassin's Creed or something like that, that just has – thousands. I don't mean to call that out as a game that has bad voice acting. It doesn't. But I'm talking about a game that has a lot of characters and there's some real sporadic, spotty stuff in there.
Yeah.
It's a good opportunity to try out the subtitles.
Have you guys played Assassin's Creed 3? Is this
something? We're not on the inside anymore.
Sad confession, but I've never played an Assassin's Creed game.
Really? They're good. They're good.
Because somebody gave me the first one as a gift, and I was going to play it, and then by then the tide had started to turn against it. Yeah. They were saying that it's not, there were some design problems and it wasn't as good as people were saying. Really, like, maybe I won't play it. And then 2 came out, and 2 seemed a lot better, but I'm like, but I had never played the first one. I kind of backlogged.
It doesn't matter.
I know, but I felt like I had to play the whole thing.
Yeah.
And now 3's out, which looks like it's the best and most interesting one, but I don't feel like I can just jump in there.
Those games are trilogies. Each, like the Assassin's Creed 2, the Assassin's Creed 2 trilogy is standalone. I mean, there's a meta story across the whole thing. You could watch the meta story in about 5 minutes on YouTube and get all you need out of it.
Right.
I guess you could
In that, like, I actually really don't care about video game stories.
That's the thing.
At all. And I'll say, and this is not an ass-kissy thing at all, I would say that Walking Dead is a rare example of a game where the story actually is kind of the game, right? Like that Telltale and you and everybody involved in that has done an incredible job of making that experience of what's happening in the story be the game.
Well, what's interesting is because the story is the game, if you're not interested in story, you're just not going to play. If you don't care about storytelling, you're just not going to touch it at all.
Right, yeah.
The where it gets interesting is with games like Assassin's Creed 3, where there's a lot of action and stuff to do, but there's also a story. A lot of, and this is what I feel like we're fighting against sometimes as trying to be storytellers in games, is getting people to kind of take their medicine. Say, no, you're going to like the story. Just try it.
It's a really
good
thing.
But people just want to blow through all the cutscenes and just kill things.
Well, right.
But I mean, and then there's a whole other kind of person who plays games. And like, I kind of don't want any more cinematic experiences in my life.
That's the thing.
Like, that's, right. I've seen all of the dudes jumping into the back of helicopters that I need, and I've seen the miracle shot at the end of the game that kills the bad guy.
Yeah,
I don't mean to just pick on Call of Duty but this is right. Like I don't.
Do you not want cliched cinematic experiences? It's no period like grand cinematic experiences.
I'm interested in. I'm much more interested in good mechanics. And then when a game with a real story comes along and has some interesting choices, like Bastion last year, I absolutely loved the story of Bastion because it has this wonderful twist at the end. And I just by saying it's there, I'm an asshole if you haven't played it, but I mean, it's also a year old, so it's on you.
Yeah, I think so. Jeff, statute of limitations.
But Jeff, are you saying in a game like Assassin's Creed or Grand Theft Auto or even something like Modern Warfare where the story and the action have all kind of wound up together in one package, that you just don't give a shit about the narrative, you just want to click through the cutscenes?
You know, I hate to say
it. You don't want the narrative context of what you're doing?
I hate to say it because it feels wrong, and yet if I'm being totally honest with myself, I think I sort of am saying that because... And it's weird to say as someone who self-identifies as a writer and who likes telling stories and reads all the time. You know, I'm always reading books. I love fiction. But in my games, what I'm doing when I'm playing a game is I'm trying to challenge my brain, right? It's like brain exercise, like whether it's chess or whatever it is. I'm trying to stimulate myself in that way. I'm not looking to sit back and have someone tell me something, especially because – and this is where I think it gets complicated is that most storytellers in the gaming business – aren't particularly good storytellers.
Right. I mean, that's the thing.
So that's the problem.
When I started playing games in the living room again, and Gina, I don't mean to keep bringing Gina into this, but she would be listening to the dialogue from the room and would laugh, and it drew to sharp relief. And there are some really notable exceptions of games that have fantastic
dialogue.
Totally
notable exceptions.
I mean, no ass kissing. The Walking Dead is
right.
Like it is edge of the chair the entire way through.
Right. I could sit here all day and name good. Planescape Torment was one. Certainly, most of the LucasArts adventure games had awesome, hilarious stories.
Very clever.
Yeah, absolutely. Even something like Braid has a narrative thread through it, which gives it a context and a contextual.
Yeah.
It just sets the scene in a way that is totally woven into the game and makes the game. Part of it.
That's a game where you don't even need the story to enjoy the mechanics.
Right. That's true. So there's plenty of examples. But there, I do find, in general, often, and I'm thinking more about like the AAA games, like Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
So more often than not, I'm just like, just what's the next area where I have to start jumping and shooting stuff?
But without any kind of narrative framework for what you're doing, doesn't it all just seem kind of pointless and random?
It does, but all I really need is the general outline. That's all I care about. Like, okay, I've been framed for something, and these bad guys are after me, and I'm trying to save her.
But you, so you
now where do I have to
go? You don't need a lot of nuance.
You want the deconstructed game.
Just give me, yeah, it's like playing WoW, you know? Like, you start off, like, really wanting to read the text, you know, the quest text, but after a while, it's like, okay, how many things do I have to kill, and tell me where to go?
Well, are those things even challenging for your brain?
Well, not in WoW, probably.
Or like a shooter.
It's funny. I'm the exact opposite. When I used to play Warcraft with a group, you know how in Warcraft you get the long narrative version of the quest text, and then you just get at the bottom, just go kill 10 of these things for people that don't care about the context.
Right.
And I would play in a group, and I'd start reading the, oh, so 10 years ago, the evil wizard, blah, blah, blah. People go, right, 10 things, let's go. And I'm like, but don't you want to know about the evil wizard? No, fuck that, we've got to kill 10 things. And people just want to blow through that content.
Sure.
But I feel like I enjoy it more if I know why I've been asked to do
this. And, you know,
when
Blizzard first released that game in 2004, they did not, you know, later, because of pressure, they made it so you could click.
You could click through, but originally you had to read all that stuff,
and it would disappear slowly too.
Oh yeah, and then you could just make it appear
because they wanted you to read it
because there was so much pushback from players that didn't want that.
Right.
So I mean, I've had the same exact reaction. Once I didn't have to play games for reviewing them in a PC hardware magazine, which is a weird thing to do anyway. I stopped paying attention to the story in almost anything. The thing that was amazing is I discovered that I liked games that let me make the stories up as I go. Right. So things like FTL and some of the weird roguelikes, which are really way too hard and no fun at all for me.
Yeah.
And then also games like Dark Souls, where I could apply my own story to the weird, horrible translations and weird stuff that goes on in there. And then something like FTL comes along, or XCOM, and those, like, XCOM is the story of my dudes. And, like, I know that there's a narrative arc there.
Absolutely.
But the narrative arc is all the same, and the details are all determined by me, and that is super duper compelling.
I agree.
When if I was faced with a, and I can't believe I'm saying this, I'm not sure that I said earlier our goal was, if we can't do quality, we'll do quantity. But like, when I'm playing Assassins or something like GTA, even, where the stories are, there's so much story, and a lot of it, like, there's always high points in those games.
Yep.
There's something really clever, and there's a side quest that's going to be awesome. Uh-huh. But then the main story is kind of a slog, and it's just, the dialogue is cheesy or delivered poorly or whatever. I just want to go to the dot or I want to go to assassinate the guy the right way, and that's the fun part of the game for me, not the stabbing.
Right. As I'm listening to you guys, I realize, I mean, it's way easy to generalize, and I think it probably is more a game-by-game basis. It's probably when I feel that the storytellers are onto something and are doing it in a clever way that's actually affecting the gameplay or something, I'm usually on board. If I feel that this is just like a frustrated sci-fi writer, you know, telling like the 800,000th version of, you know, whatever, of Terminator or whatever it is again in a bad way, then I tune out. Then I just want to just tell me where to go.
So having said that, I'm curious to know what, because I don't know if we've asked this, but what do you think of like the BioWare games where they're very story-centric, but there's all, again, that's a very classic kind of example of trying to tell you a big cinematic type movie story, and also there's a big game there to play as well.
Right. Well, I can tell you that I haven't played Mass Effect 3. And I haven't played Dragon Age 2, so I jumped off the ship before those two.
And what's interesting is, and again, I think it's a result of player pushback, that Mass Effect 3, I think what I'm right in saying, was the first one where they added a narrative-free mode, where you could just, you didn't have to look at any of the cutscenes, you could just blast your way through it. Because clearly enough players
want that. I thought it was the other way, that you didn't have to do... No, you're right.
No, you can go both. You can. There's a version of it where you can make the action really, really super-duper easy.
Yeah, I do think, you know, they're a company that I don't know where they're at now, because I haven't played the last two games, but, you know, when I was playing them and was really into them, I think they were, you know, better than average storytellers. I think they really did a good job.
Mass Effect 2 was I didn't play Dragon's Age, so Swords and Sorcery out, but Mass Effect 2 was a high point.
Yeah, I thought Mass Effect 2 was great. Yeah. I mean, I do think that, you know, some of their dark side, light side stuff that really goes in all their games, you know, it can be a little simplistic, right? Like, I think Walking Dead has done a much better job of the shades of gray, right? Or either decision is going to suck for you.
You know, it's interesting. This has come up a lot when we talked about The Walking Dead, and I don't know if it's that one is necessarily better than the other. I just think there are two different approaches.
Mass Effect has
a very kind of heroic good guys versus the bad guy type universe.
Right.
Classic, mythic universe. And that's great. So it's fun to play the hero. It's also fun to play the kind of delicious anti-hero.
Right.
It's,
In Mass Effect 2, the decisions are very predictable. So you hit the red one if you want to do the evil thing, you hit the blue
one.
You
know that blue is good and red is bad. You just know that.
Right.
And with Walking Dead, so one of the things I did was, after talking to Patrick Klepek about it, was turned off the switch that says, let me know when this is a big game decision. And is that Walking Dead that had that?
You can turn off. There's a toggle in Walking Dead. You can turn off when the game will give you notifications about. There's probably a consequence to what you just
did.
Yeah,
so I turned that off immediately because I didn't want to know that stuff.
Okay.
And I had played a little bit of the first episode and was kind of like, oh, this is, why does it tell? I don't want to. I want to think.
Yeah,
each decision
I agree. I think
really
it's probably a better
important.
Experience if you turn some of that stuff off and just work through it yourself.
Yeah. And. You know, because of the way the because all of those decisions are super ambiguous, I can't even say words anymore, ambiguous, it makes you think about every little thing more. And you're like, hold on, if he says this, is this a – and the one thing that you guys did really well that some other people that do the kind of branching conversation trees is they're not ambiguous answers. You know – oh, this is a snarky answer, right, and this is this is the reassuring the kid answer, and this is the fuck the world, man. Fucking hate everything about this. This is really messed up.
Right.
And with Mass Effect, sometimes you would pick one answer, and then you'd be like, no, that's not what I meant at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, anytime that fucks up agency, and that's bad.
Yeah. I think it really boils down to the quality of the writing. What boils down to when I think about
we're really kissing Gary's ass.
The
right now.
Conversation trees. Well, actually, I wasn't thinking about Walking Dead here. Now I was thinking about going back to LucasArts. Like conversation trees. It didn't really matter which one. I mean, it would matter which one you picked. But the great thing was every single choice was hilarious.
Yeah, they were all fun.
Response.
Yeah.
So just reading it was fun.
And you have to figure out the pun to get the right answer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So to me, I think it boils down to the writing. When I really think about it.
And you can take that all the way back to Infocom.
Oh yeah,
when it literally was all.
It was just writing.
It was just interactive prose. Yeah, right. That's all it was.
Yeah,
I'm terrible at puns, and I didn't really play LucasArts adventure games. Do you think that nerds are punny because of LucasArts adventure games, or did they just tap into a previously already susceptible to puns crowd? Which came first, the pun or the LucasArts adventure?
Well,
game?
The puns were only part of the humor.
Yeah,
right?
And you're talking about a very, very specific subgenre of a particular kind of genre of adventure game at LucasArts, and now the kind of game, and now the games that Tim Schafer makes. I mean, that's pretty much
more
it. It's a very specific.
Punny.
Okay.
Most of the humor was just ridiculous. You know, this kind of stuff you see on Phineas and Ferb now and things like that. Okay. You know? Yeah.
Humor is tough in games. I mean, nine times out of ten, you end up with Leisure Suit Larry as opposed to.
Yeah,
something that's actually funny.
Which I never laughed at ever.
Oh God,
I don't know why.
I was 14 when the Leisure Suit Larry games were out, and it was funny.
Was it?
You were 14.
Now, was it funny, or was it like the kind of
it was a little
subtle
racy.
Titillation?
It was like Playboy ads.
Yeah,
in your 60s.
It's like your forest porn.
I guess
in
this was sort of
no. Forest porn was really
my
super
first
explicit.
Porn.
It was terrifying.
Baby's first porn.
Yeah.
Did you hear Will's story about when he was a kid? The porn he would find
the
out
woods,
in the forest.
You'd go walking in the woods on the park, and there'd just be some super hardcore porn on the side of the path there.
Wow.
And it would.
Some guy just left it out there. He was
no,
done
no,
with
a kid
it.
Buried it.
So Jeff's theory is that a child buried it because he couldn't leave in the house,
right.
Which makes a lot of sense. We're coming up on. We're past noon, so we better.
No, we were just
over.
Getting to the porn.
No, we'll be right back. It's time every 2 hours. Don't worry, Jeff. There'll be more porn after the break.
You said there'd be porn.
No, I never said that. I said there'd be. I said there'd be fantastic peanut butter
children.
Snickers for the kids.
Guns and porn.
Guns and porn. We're gonna take a quick break. That means stream exclusive content coming up right now. We'll be back in 2 minutes. If you're watching this on YouTube, just hit next on the playlist.
All right, I'll be back in a sec.
Jeff Green.